Smith Show on Country Radio WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Sid Kavulich, going to be talking about the budget, the vouchers, everything, all the insanity that's going on in the State House right now. House Bill 916. The screw job that Scott Perry's trying to pull off against working people in this state with this really a theft. You got working people who pay into unemployment compensation insurance. They're paying into it year after year after year. And when they need it, this guy wants to screw them over. This guy wants to take away from people. Again, you know, at the worst possible time, you know, if times were good, you know, I can say, you know, hey, let's take a look at maybe doing some things. But it is raining, folks. There are people who are desperate to find a job. And this guy wants to pull that lifeline away from him. The good state representative, Scott Perry. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate your help. You guys got in under the auspices that you were going to create jobs, not screw over people who don't have them. Just a little reminder to the people who voted for Scott Perry. He is absolutely going to stick it to the working people of this state. In his press release, understand, in his press release, he told you exactly who wrote his bill. His bill was written by business special interests. The Chamber of Commerce wrote his bill. Not working people, not you, not me, the business people. The lobbyists for the business special interest. It's right in his press release. Got to give him credit for one thing. At least he's honest about the fact that someone else is doing his work. Also on the program tonight, we're going to talk with Michael Weinstein. He's the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. You know, for the last several years, we've been seeing this bizarre move to the extreme right. By the military when it comes to religious issues. You remember General Boykins a couple years ago saying, well, you know, my God's bigger than your God. We're going to talk to Mikey about that. Also, Wisconsin State Representative Nick Milroy is going to be here, our good friend from Wisconsin, about the voter bill that they rammed through last night to try and screw voters out of their rights. I mean, are you getting this? Are you kind of getting what the Republican Party's all about right now? Actually, what they've been about for the last 20, 30 years, but what they're about right now is taking your rights away to vote, taking away unemployment benefits from people who need it. They're going to go after workmen's compensation. They're going to go after more workers' rights. They've been trying to steal collective bargaining rights. Are you getting this? They don't have you in mind when they're pushing this stuff through. Who do they have in mind? Business special interests. And I know we need to be more business friendly. How much more business friendly do we have to be? And we'll ask that to Alex Kaplan from Common Cause, Pennsylvania, when he talks about all of the money that the drillers from the Marcellus Shale are handing over to the politicians and why we're not getting any rational regulation, why we're not getting any rational taxation on a massive resource that we're not benefiting from. Oh, gee, they're creating jobs, though, Rick. Come on. They're fixing up the farms better than they've ever been. They painted the fence. They painted the fence, and they planted some trees. Everything's just great. We're loving it up here in gas country. Problem is, their wells are shot. Livestock are eating tainted food. And who knows what else is going on because we're not watching. Nobody's regulating this. Because you know what? They can regulate themselves. They're a good corporate citizen. At least that's what their ads all over the radio and TV keep telling us. Amazing stuff. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check us out on the web at thericksmithshow.com. You can watch from the studio with the live video stream that we put there at the website, thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you want to yell at me, which I've gotten a bunch of people yelling recently, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do actually love that. So where do we go from here? The Republicans have put out their budget in Washington, basically a screw job to the American people. The Republicans in the State House here in Pennsylvania have put out their budget, screw job to the working people of this state, and nothing else is being said. The Congressional Progressive Caucus, and we've talked about this in the past, they put out the people's budget. They put out a budget that said, you know what, there's a lot of things we should be doing. There's some compromise that can be made. There's some great ideas out there. Let's have a conversation and do what works best. Republicans say no. No. We have a bag of tricks. We've got our ideology. We've got our bag of failed ideology. We're going to go back to the future. We're going to have deregulation. We're going to have massive tax breaks for corporations. We're going to have massive tax breaks for the wealthiest. And we're not going to regulate Wall Street because we're going to fight any attempt to rein in the abuses there on Wall Street. Isn't that how we got into the mess that we're in right now? Isn't that what got us here? So why of doing more of the same, why is that the only thing the media is focusing on? And when I looked at this Progressive Caucus budget, the reality is almost 70% of the people in this country think ending the Bush tax cuts is a good start. Two-thirds of the people in this country. Now, understand, we are a 50-50 split down the middle kind of country, polarized. So when you see nearly 70% saying, you know what? Those Bush tax cuts, those hurt us. We should do away with those. That is huge. When two-thirds of the people say cutting military spending, cutting the waste and fraud there in the military budget would be a good idea. That's huge. When you got 56% of the people saying, you know what? We should be investing in job creation. We should be doing some of the things that haven't been done. Like, oh, I don't know, rebuilding our infrastructure. Like, gee, I don't know, maybe public transportation. Maybe broadband access for everyone. Maybe actually get us internet speeds like some of the other industrialized nations. You know, if that's going to be where our commerce is at, wouldn't it be a good place to start investing, you think? I know I do. The other thing the people's budget does is it says, you know what? We're going to honor our commitment to the seniors. We're going to honor our commitment to the poor, which is to help make sure that Medicare, nearly 80%, Medicaid, nearly 70%, Social Security, nearly 80%, are left alone. And our commitment to those folks remains. Now, Republicans, their budget solely slash and burn, man. Slash and burn, destruction, pain and suffering for the working class without any thought of the damage that it's going to do. And I know. Gee, Rick, you make them not sound like they're evil. Some, yeah. Some of them are, I do believe, are pure evil. And I think the rest of them have just bought into this blind faith ideology that somehow if we deregulate enough, somehow if we give corporations more money, if we give them more tax breaks, if we give them more deregulation, if we give the wealthy more cash, somehow, magically, jobs are going to appear. Somehow, out of this pile of cash that we're handing to the very top, they're going to consume more. And the reality is it's not going to happen. It's never happened. And it's never going to happen. The only way we move this country forward is by having pussies tax policy. And I'm a big proponent of tax policies that put more money into the people who spend money's hand than the people who invest it overseas. Sorry, just my philosophy. If you want an economy that's moving, you give people who spend money to spend to get that economy moving. You know, when we were talking about saving GM, and it was a great thing that we did, no matter what the Republicans wanted, saving the U.S. auto industry was one of the best things that this president has done. Now, here's what bothers me. We didn't push for more demand. The U.S. government should have said, we're going to buy our vehicles from you. We're going to buy all hybrids. We're going to replace our entire fleet, giving them the demand to hire people back. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the auto industry hiring 1,000 people in the next year and a half, from what I understand. And that's a good thing. But I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated by this slash and burn idea. And the people's budget calls for health care for all, calls for protecting Social Security, calls for building up our infrastructure, calls for trade policies that are going to be fair to American companies, the right to organize, raising and indexing the minimum wage, or at least as I've advocated for, increasing the earned income tax credit. Yeah, you look at this stuff, and there's so much to do, and the Republicans are holding us back because they've dug in. And it's not that the American people spoke in November that they wanted massive tax cuts. No, they were angry. They were angry at the process. But what the Republicans are reading in this, that, oh, we want spending cuts. We want massive tax breaks for corporations, massive tax breaks for the wealthy. I think they got a rude awakening coming for them, because that's not what November was about. And that's why I'm asking people, you got to contact your representative. You've got to push for some of the reforms that are in this progressive budget. Make it an America jobs program. Getting us out of Afghanistan and Iraq and out of Libya. We found out $750 million we've spent already in Libya. We've got to start talking about this stuff. Anyway, we're going to talk about the Pennsylvania budget when we come back. Also, the voucher fiasco and this massive screw job by Scott Perry, the representative from Dillsburg. And look, if you've got his number on your speed dial, and I suggest if you live in Dillsburg, you put it on your speed dial and you call him early and often and tell him, dump this House Bill 916. This is a massive, massive screw job for the working people of this state. And this is not the end of it. I'm telling you there is going to be hell to pay over this bill if it gets passed. Because this is a destruction of the safety net for working people in this state. And if you sit, you take this laying down, you deserve what you get. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back with Pennsylvania State Representative Sid Kavulich. Stick around.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is making major investments in Midwestern states, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. auto company said it plans to invest $2 billion into 17 U.S. plants in 8 states. As a result of the investment, GM says it will preserve or create 4,000 jobs. The Tuesday announcement came with few details as to which plants would be the beneficiaries of the investment. Many of the jobs will likely be offered to the 1,300 employees currently languishing in layoff limbo. The company does plan to recall all of those workers by the end of the year. Since the company left bankruptcy in 2009, thanks mostly to a controversial bailout by the Obama administration, it has preserved or created nearly 10,000 jobs. Any new positions will likely come in at the $14 per hour entry level wage, as part of one of the major contract concessions agreed to by the United Auto Workers in order to help lift the company out of bankruptcy.
The AFL-CIO is endorsing the America Health Security Act that would move the country to a single-payer universal health care model. The AFL-CIO says health care reform last year was an historic milestone, but since health care is a human right, the nation needs a universal single-payer health care system. The United Auto Workers' effort to organize teaching assistants at NYU is kicking into a higher gear. A majority of teaching, research, and graduate assistants at NYU Poly have filed for an NLRB union election to win recognition as a UAW bargaining unit. Manash Ganesh is working as a research assistant while he completes his PhD in chemical and biological sciences. He hopes to have an election this summer to establish a union at NYU Poly.
At the end of summer, we would have an NLRB election for our union, and hopefully by the unanimous support by all our graduate students, which we all share, I think it'll result in a global success. And this will only be a kind of like an example to the rest of the schools out there where they can establish better standards.
Lab safety is one of the biggest issues, and Ganesh says the teaching assistants at the university can get better, safer working conditions with the union.
We'll be having a hearing soon about whether or not Poly is agreeing to talk with us on these global issues of lab safety and also better work conditions and also paying these students who are actually employees to begin with.
In 2004, an anti-union majority of Bush-appointed NLRB board members stripped teaching assistants of their labor rights, but those rights are expected to be restored by the current National Labor Relations Board. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Our tweet of the day, tell them they can steal your benefits, but you want a $4 million bonus for putting up with their thievery. And that's aimed at Representative Scott Perry. Look, this House Bill 916, this is a massive theft of benefits from workers who have paid into an insurance system all their working lives. And now what's happened? They want to change the rules of the game at a time when you need the benefits the most. For the last 25 years, workers in this state have paid on every dime of their income into the unemployment compensation insurance plan. It's the employers who've walked away from their responsibility, and it hasn't increased from the $8,000 level it was 25 years ago. Yet this guy, again, wants to blame workers, wants to go after them. And I got to tell you, this 916, this House Bill 916, this can't stand. Just cannot stand. Anyway, I've got our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Sid Kavulich on the line. Sid, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I've had it up to here. This House Bill 916 is just a massive, massive backdoor job to the working people of this state.
I just don't know what we're trying to do to the middle class, to the working people. You know, I spoke to some graduates of a pre-apprenticeship program last night, some kids, high school kids, who went to school during the day, at night, and on Saturdays, gave up hours of their time for 12 weeks. And this program helps them, pass the tests for you know, the pre-apprenticeship program and gets them into, you know, good, solid paying jobs. I said, us of my generation and our parents' generation, we were taught that you work hard and you can succeed. But now you have to work harder and you don't know if you're going to be able to succeed.
Yeah. What's happened, and this is what's happened to this country, is we have moved right back to the 1880s. The Republicans are working diligently to repeal the entire 20th century and take us back to the days where, you could work your fingers to the bone and never get ahead. And I think that's right where they want us.
And I can't believe that there are so many people in the position to affect this today that continue to, now again, Even the corporations and the people that do the hiring and own these businesses, I mean, they have a right to make a profit, but
absolutely,
we also should be able to earn family sustaining wages, and we should, and when we go to job to our job, when we go to work and we work hard, we should also expect to be paid a wage that allows us to live a decent life, and we're not having that anymore.
Absolutely, and I understand that. Look, and I think Samuel Gompers, the founder of the American Federation of Labor, said it. It should be criminal that a corporation doesn't operate at a profit. And I agree. But when there is a profit, when there's some part of the pie to be had, it should be shared with the people who actually create that wealth, said.
And but when you're making, in some cases, billions and billions of dollars of profit, you're showing that in a single quarter. I mean, it should be criminal. I mean, it really should be criminal. If I did that to somebody, I would have to go on trial if I stole somebody's money or stole somebody's livelihood like that. And it just boggles my mind.
It does boggle my mind. And I look at this House Bill 916, that Scott Perry, one of your colleagues, has put forth, the representative from the Dillsburg area in our listening area. This to me, again, is, as I said, I'm going to say this all week and all month until this gets shot down. This 916 bill, this is, at the worst possible time, harmful to the working people of this state, and it's theft, and it should be criminal.
And the only thing we could do, those of us who are representing and are in Harrisburg and in positions in Washington for the working people, for the middle class people, we can only continue to fight and try to do what we can and hope that you know, more sane heads, I guess, if you want to say, will prevail eventually. But
that's the,
you know, it's really concerning.
So let's talk about the budget, Sid. You know, your colleagues in the House there, your Republican colleagues, came out with their budget. Not much of a change, in my opinion, from what the governor has proposed, which is basically slitting the throats of every kid in this state by failing to invest in their future. But let me get your opinion on it.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, I don't want it to sound, somebody asked me yesterday, I was interviewed by a television person, and they asked what I think is most important. And there really is, how do you choose between what's the most important portion of this budget, the kids who are going to lose, whether it's pre-K, whether it's elementary basic education, whether it's higher education, or is it the people who are benefiting from or who are going to be hurt by almost $500 million in cuts in the Department of Public Welfare? I mean, it's hard to pick and choose. It's almost like saying, you know, who would you rather send to the end of the plank? You know, everybody's going to hurt from this, or a lot of people are going to hurt from this. I shouldn't say everybody. You know, you look at $1.5 million cut from the Accountability Block Grant Program. Now, this is a programs that have shown there's proof that the early education of these children, the pre-K education, pays benefits down the line, where children who are benefiting from the accountability block grants or who have are showing improvement down the line. They're showing that these are working, and yet we're cutting them by 61% compared to last year's fiscal budget. Basic education being cut by $449 million, almost 8% compared to last year. Higher education, they're talking about restoring some of the cuts to higher education. Okay, still, you're going to see to the state system, the state's PASHE, Pennsylvania State System of Colleges, you're still going to get cut 15%. Temple, Penn State, Pitt, those schools are still going to get 25%. That's still a pretty big cut in tuition for kids who are still struggling to pay their bills.
Yep.
I mean, so although this the Republican budget says that we've restored some money to education, it's still going to hurt so many people.
Here's my problem. And look, I'm one of the first people who will say when times are tough, we have to all roll up
right.
our sleeves and
yes.
get to work and sacrifice where sacrifice is needed.
Right.
But just in the couple of seconds that you were talking about the cuts that are being proposed, I thought mm-hmm. of the $866 million in tax breaks this governor wants to hand out. I thought of the $2 billion Liberty Loan Fund, his own personal slush fund our governor wants to create. I thought of the fact that we're not taxing Marcellus Shale. I thought of the fact that we're not closing the laundering scheme in the Delaware loophole. We're not taxing tobacco. Before we start taking children's futures away and stealing from senior citizens, maybe there's some other avenues we could use.
And Rick, don't forget about the $500 million surplus that has come in that they want to put into the rainy day fund. Don't forget about another area. How about the internet sales tax that we're not charging on companies that have locations here in Pennsylvania?
Yep.
You hear, there's money there. Also, it's hurting the mom and pop or the brick and mortar stores in Pennsylvania who are losing business to people who are buying on the internet because they don't have to pay sales tax in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So even more money.
You know, at the end of this, I mean, there are, look, I'm not against cutting. I'm not against sacrificing
no.
a little bit, but there are so many avenues that we could be going down first. And when you close that and you still have a shortfall, then we've all got to tighten our belts. Then we've got to do what we've got to do. But there's so much out there and the priorities, seem to me to be skewed with this administration and your Republican colleagues.
And Rick, you're right. I agree 100% where we have to cut. We have to tighten our belts on spending. I agree. We don't. I mean, you know, I'm not looking for a medal, but even in my own expenses in the legislature, I'm trying to save where I can. And but, I mean, we all have to tighten our belts. I do it at home. You do it at home. A lot of people do. And I agree. There are cuts that have to be made. But again, there are areas that we could still cut spending, but still look to where we can raise revenue. So we don't seriously hurt the people that really need this in Pennsylvania.
Yep, and you hit on it right there. I don't think we have a spending problem in this state. I think we have a revenue problem. For too long, we've been allowing revenue to flee this state. We've been allowing those who have done very well to abdicate their responsibility. And now, hey, it's time. Times are tough. It's pouring. Chip in a little bit.
Yeah, and even again, even when you talk about things like the Delaware loophole, and I mean, if we want to close the Delaware loophole, and Representative Phyllis Mundy from up here in northeastern Pennsylvania, she is looking for sponsorship. She has introduced legislation which closes the Delaware loophole, but also reduces the corporate income tax in Pennsylvania. So again, I'm not talking. It's a point of being fair.
Yep.
And so let's be fair. We do have the second highest corporate income tax in the country. Let's get that down so we could make the state more friendly to business, but yet not give them a free ride. I understand there are businesses that we don't want, we just want it to be fair. That's all.
I like you, Sid, but here's the thing. You just fell into one of their talking points. This
okay.
talking point that we've got the highest corporate tax in the, one of the highest in the country. Three quarters of the companies in this state don't pay it. So if nobody's
right.
paying it, do we really yeah. have the highest tax?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. You're right. I have to, my bad on that one.
No, I mean, I'm just, you know, but I hear
yeah.
that ad nauseum,
yeah.
but nobody's
yeah.
paying it. So do we
yeah.
really have it? The
you're
people
right.
who are
well,
paying
yeah.
it are
yeah.
those who can't afford it.
Sure.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with our good friend, State Representative Sid Kavulich. Sid, last thing I want to get to. We don't have money for kids, for K through 12. We're going to cut $890 million according to the Republicans in the House, or $1 billion according to our governor. We don't have money for higher education because we're broke. But yet we've got this money somewhere out there to set up a privatization scheme of our education system, with these insane vouchers. And our governor on Monday went to Washington to find some billionaire friends, to help him sell this. I think these vouchers are the absolute worst thing that could happen to education in this state. Curious your thought.
Well, Rick, when you look at the vouchers, first of all, what they are going to end up costing down the road, in I believe the third year, it's going to cost us $1 billion. Some of the advocates for the voucher system are talking about how the kids, particularly down in the southeast area of the state in Philadelphia, are going to get into out of underperforming schools and get the education they deserve. First of all, the private schools or the schools that are going to be accepting the students who come with the vouchers in hand, they are not going to be accepting every student that comes with the voucher. There still is a danger that these schools are only going to choose who they want. They're not going, there's no accountability. I mean, there's no accountability for these students with these vouchers that come in. We need more accountability if we want to have some type of a, if someone wants to promote a voucher system. And again, and the thing that I've been talking about is you have a young student who is in an underperforming school or who is in a bad situation in a school, gets a voucher, goes to a charter school, a private school, a Catholic school with his voucher in hand, thinking that finally here's my chance to get into a good education, to get a good education, get in a good institution, comes to the door and is refused. Psychologically, what does it do to that kid who has been rejected when that, and that student thinks he or she is going to get a chance? I mean,
when we strip
away money, when we strip away everything else, poor schools, poor teachers, what about the kid and what it does psychologically to that student? I think let's look at it at the basic, right at the bottom and right at the start and think how we're going to affect that student.
You know, at the end of this, for me, if you've in one of those districts, like in one of those areas like you're talking about, let's say you throw up a brand new charter school, the culture, the area, the environment is still the same. You know, putting up a new school doesn't make it any better. Doesn't make it different. What has to happen is there has to be more involvement by the school, the parents, a united kind of thing. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and I've seen this firsthand. I've seen this kind of stuff happen. And when I was a kid, what they thought the answer was is busing poor kids from one side of the city to the other side of the city. It didn't do any good. They were just moving around resources instead of getting in there and really solving problems. We're looking for silver bullets, and vouchers are not it.
And let's if we want to look at it and study it more, let's put it back in. Let's study it more, but let's not just roll it out without really vetting it, without really looking at it. Make sure we have a system that's really going to work. And let's not. And again, public education. You know, let's not abandon that for the voucher system either.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Sid, I appreciate your time. It's always great talking to you. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Okay, Rick. Thanks a lot. You have a great one.
Thanks so much. Pennsylvania State Representative Sid Kavulich. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's check today's sports scores. 4, 10.7, and 21.5. Those tallies are from the oil league. And the winner, of course, is the league's powerhouse, ExxonMobil. 4, as you might have guessed, is the $4 that Exxon is siphoning out of your wallet these days for 1 gallon of its petrol. Next comes 10.7. That's the $10.7 billion in profits that this oil giant has soaked up in just the first 3 months of this year. A new record, not achieved by any managerial genius, increased productivity, or improvement in consumer service, but solely by the jack-up in gasoline prices. Finally, 21.5. This is the big score made by Rex Tillerson, Exxon CEO. The chief pulled down $21.5 million last year in personal compensation, making him the highest-paid executive in the oil league and one of the most richly paid CEOs in the entire country. Wait, this late-breaking score is just in 0. That's from the special tax game that ExxonMobil consistently wins in Washington. Last year, ExxonMobil powered through loopholes created by its slick lobbying team to pay an income tax of zero on the $19 billion it had racked up in profits the year before, making it one of America's most flagrant tax avoiders. But wait again. Here's a surprising update on that score. Exxon's taxes were actually less than zero. How's that possible? Because Big Oil's lobbyists have so skewed the tax system that Exxon got a $156 million rebate from us taxpayers last year. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Exxon is soaking us at the gas pump and sacking our public treasury to gain record profits for itself while bestowing a royal fortune on its CEO. Oh, one more score, $14 million. That's the average dollar amount that Exxon spends on campaign donations and lobbyists every year. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
One 888 520 Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. I am on fire over this House Bill 916. And it's very rare that something really grabs me and pisses me off to no end. And this is it. This is one of those moments where you go, this guy wants to stick you in the back with a big smile on his face and just understand what this bill does. They want to go back now, after the fact, recalculate how unemployment benefits are calculated over a three-year period. So let's say you're a seasonal worker, and you work summer times, a couple of months here. You're struggling to get by. You're struggling to support your family. And your employer just doesn't have enough work for you. And you're loyal to that employer, and you're off, you're on. What they're going to do is they're going to take a three-year track record instead of the highest quarter in the last four, which is how it is now. It's the highest quarter of the last four. What they're going to do, they're going to average out those 3 years. And if you've had a rough patch, especially the last 2 years where unemployment has been through the roof, you're going to really, really suffer under this. And the idea, understand what the idea in this is. It's to create that permanent desperation class, that permanent class of people who are struggling and struggling and struggling and never going to get ahead. That's what they want, because they know if you've got a big enough underclass, a big enough desperation class, you're going to pull everybody down with you, which is the reason they want to destroy the public sector unions. Because these are people who still have some health care. They still have reasonable defined benefit pensions. They're doing okay. Not great. Okay. And what they want to do is if they can destroy those jobs, they can put those people into the quote-unquote private sector where wages are more competitive, which means lower, and standard of living lower, which means a spiraling down of the economy. If we can get those public sector people into the private sector, we can draw private sector wages down even further. And that, to me, Jake, is exactly what this is all about. It's all about driving down wages so corporations get benefit and people will suffer.
It's another part of their playbook, Rick. I mean, this is just another page in the book to go after working people. And this is their opportunity, and they're going to seize it.
I mean, bill after bill after bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's this onslaught. For at least the next 6 months, is not going to stop. If it's not stealing your rights to vote, it's stealing the benefits that you've paid into for unemployment. They're gonna go after workman's compensation, which in this state has one of the worst comp systems in the country for workers, one of the most business friendly thanks to the changes in '97. What more? What more can we do to make Pennsylvania business friendly? Maybe cut off all the taxes. Maybe we could pay the businesses to work for them. Now, look, I'm not anti-business. I think corporations should profit. They should run themselves efficiently and do all of that.
But at the end of the day, man, there have got to be some guidelines. Like any game you're ever going to play, you play football, baseball, basketball, whatever, there are rules. And you got to play by those. Problem is, you got Republicans over here saying, oh, we don't want any rules. We want to be able to slit people's throats. We want to be able to use and abuse people, kick them to the curb whenever we want. Nuts.
Well, if they succeed, Rick, and if, in fact, and I think you're pretty much right, they want to go back 100 years, I think some of these people better think it through, because what happened in the Great Depression, it got to the point where some of the wealthy and some of those who were prospering had second thoughts. And I think with the advent of FDR, even though he kind of encouraged it, I think some of them realized if in fact workers are repressed too far and the economy suffers and the wages aren't there, eventually businesses are going to suffer. It's that simple. Might take a little bit longer, but in the end, we all suffer.
There's no one to buy your product. You can't make a product. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think of this? Do you see this the way I do? Do you see this as a stab in the back to working people? Have you ever been laid off? How'd the system work for you? I remember when I was laid off. It was the worst time of my life. Didn't know if I was ever going to find another job. Fortunately, I didn't have a family and children and mortgages and all that. But, you know, as a young guy, I was worried. Am I ever going to get that job? I'm putting out resume after resume after resume, going on job interview after job interview, and nothing. And to have a governor come out and say, well, there are lazy people out there, and they're not going to take jobs, and to have a Republican Party who, in this state, who's going to spew the same rhetoric, to me is just a flat slap in the face. Anyway, today in Washington, Jay Rockefeller IV, in a press release, announced that he was going to ask the Obama administration to be sure that the new regulations on trucks carrying freight from Mexico to the United States do not jeopardize safety or existing jobs in the U.S. And what I love about this press release, because I just read it for you, I'll read it again. Catch it if you can. It's going to come by real quick. He's asking the Obama administration to be sure that new regulations on trucks carrying freight from Mexico to the United States do not jeopardize safety or existing jobs in the United States. What's the key line in that story? Carrying freight from Mexico to the U.S. What happened to cross-border trucking, where we were going to have a level playing field, where we're going to compete on a level, you know, because we're trading partners. You know, we're going to have this give and take. I don't see any concern about U.S. trucks going into Mexico by this guy, Jay Rockefeller, because I think he's smart enough to realize there will be no trucks going from the United States into Mexico. This is a one-way deal again, another one-way deal to screw the American worker. Who benefits? The shareholders. Who benefits? The corporations. You don't think any of those savings, Jake, you don't think any of those savings are going to be passed on to the consumer, do you?
No.
You would be naive to believe that by having that Mexican driver come all the way up here to Pennsylvania to deliver that whatever was going to somehow save the consumer. You're not naive enough to believe that.
No.
Yes, I hope not.
No.
But look, you know, at the end of this, that's what's going to happen when they open up the border. We're going to pay for their testing. We're going to pay for keeping track of them. We're going to pay for their electronic onboard recorders. We're going to pay the taxpayer. Now, think of this for a second. Think of how good this is for the trucking companies. We're going to pay, as the taxpayers of this country, we're going to pay to monitor the entire Mexican trucking industry as they roll into the U.S. We're going to pay to do all that monitoring. The companies aren't going to have to do that. They've got the U.S. taxpayer to do it for them. Isn't that beautiful? I got to tell you, you got to love how this NAFTA thing works out for the big special interests and for the investor class. Not working out too well for you and me. And especially, I got to tell you, if you're a truck driver in this country right now, time to look for another job. Because when they start rolling across the border, it's trouble.
And again, for the 100th time, I remember that argument in 94. And Labor was saying, we are going to give up our sovereignty. Oh, no, 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 no. It's going to be as they would, according to them, we're going to be trucking in their country. Well, how do we make out on it?
There's no trucking into their country.
That's exactly right.
You're not going to find an American truck driver.
And
if there are, if you're on the road tonight and you're driving your rig down the road, I would love to hear you tell me that you're willing to take your rig with the shiny bumpers and the shiny wheels into Mexico. I would love to hear the rationale of why you would do that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Walmart and why this cross-border trucking thing. Kind of interesting. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME. We make it happen!
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We're a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just surrender and water at all. Just got time to say your prayer. While you're waiting for the hammer.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, going back to this Mexican trucking thing, you know, I drove for years, and I got to tell you, there's no way in a cold day in North Dakota would you ever find me anywhere near Mexico driving a big rig for a number of reasons. One, I mean, the local government, local police, can you trust them? Two, there's a civil war basically going on. Three, their laws are completely different than ours. Do you think the State Department is going to back you up if you get into trouble? Four, you've got shiny bumpers, man. They're going to slit your throat and take your tires. There's a whole bunch of reasons why I don't see anybody going down there. So they understand. I think you know, the people who are seeing this from the government side are going, wait, this is going to be a one-way deal. We need to try and protect our workers somehow. Now, understand, and I know somebody is going to tell me, well, you know, they can only go from Mexico to a direct place here. That's right. So if they make a product there in Mexico, they can only go from that company to a distribution point here and then back. But here's the thing. When you start building certain loads, when you start building, having enough warehouses down on the Mexican border, because you're going to see warehouses fleeing to the Mexican border. You're going to see job loss in this country in warehousing. Get ready for it. In those warehouses, you're going to have the Walmarts of the world with a massive distribution center run out of Juarez or out of the border towns there in Mexico. And those trucks are going to come right from that Walmart distribution center right to a store, completely loaded and back. And you think I'm kidding? That's what's going to happen, because that's what's happened over in the EU. They've been going through a cross-border system for the last 50 years. It has taken them 50 years, and they're still getting screwed over by the lower-wage countries. You cannot possibly allow this to happen. Now, Walmart sees this. Walmart sees the writing on the wall. The border's going to be open. Hey, we're going to have a huge Walmart distribution center or Target or any of these big box places. But Walmart in particular, because the people over at Think Progress came up with an online job listing from Walmart looking for a director of labor relations. Now understand, Walmart sees the writing on the wall. They're gonna be able to build a massive distribution center on the border. So what do you need? You need people. You need people who speak Spanish fluently, who are vehemently anti-union. So what do? You go out and you get yourself a director of labor relations. And you put right there in the job description that it requires helping to keep the company's human resource department a union-free environment. And you put under additional preferred qualifications that you need to speak Spanish fluently, because we need to keep our workforce union free, because, you know, when those workers have a voice, bad things happen, like profits leave our pockets and go into theirs. So now think about this. They know they're going to be able to build these massive distribution centers. They know those drivers are going to come in across the border, come into their their stores. They're going to want to have their attack team on ready, full of Spanish-speaking people to keep those drivers who are going to be the target of organizing. Understand, because they're going to be the ones getting really, really screwed. So you need to have your attack dogs who speak their language. You need to have your attack dogs ready at all times with a commitment to keeping a union-free workplace. Stop and think about how amazing that is, and that they get away with this. I mean, you look at the story about Boeing, and Boeing is not a story about the Labor Relations Board overreaching their bounds. What's important about Boeing, it's not about South Carolina, it's not about Washington, it's about your right. And what the National Labor Relations Board said is, in this country, you have the right. You have the right to strike. And Boeing came out in public and said, no, you basically don't. We're moving. We're retaliating against you for you standing up for your rights. It wouldn't have mattered if that plant Boeing built was here in Pennsylvania or in New York City or Michigan or South Carolina or Mississippi. It doesn't matter. It's about your right that they want to take away from you. And what amazes me is you have working people in this country who cannot grasp that simple fact that it is about your rights, and they want to take those rights away. So when the right wing goes nuts and they do all of the shenanigans that they've been pulling, oh, we need to defund that one case. We need to just defund that one thing. Stop and think about it for what it really is. It's stealing your rights. Much like they want to do here with their no rights at work agenda, Daryl Metcalf and all of his insanity. Much like Scott Walker wanted to do in Wisconsin, stealing collective bargaining rights in a lot of the states across this country run by Republicans, stealing rights away because they want to have dictatorial power. They don't want working people to say, you know what? It's my right. They're tired of hearing about your rights. They're tired about of people saying, I have the right to health care. You know, in Rand Paul's vision, anyone who says they have the right to health care says, you're in favor of slavery. You know, kind of amazing how he gets to there. But having the right to do anything, according to our friends on the extreme radical right wing of the Republican Party, somehow that's wrong in their opinion. And it's frustrating. Did you see this? We talked about this the other night, Jake. And this Meredith Atwell Baker. Have you heard of this? Meredith Atwell Baker, she is right now on the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. She's one of the Republican appointees. She's going to resign on June 3rd. Now, understand, she was one of the people out in front pushing the merger between Comcast and NBC Universal. She was the one who came out and said, oh, it has taken too long. Oh, it's taken too long to approve this because it's important for our competitiveness. We need to let this happen. She was also one of the people who oversaw the $1.5 billion program to get consumers to make that transition to digital-only television. So think about this for a second. She was on the case. She was pushing it for Comcast to take over NBC Universal. She was out there pushing for this digital-only TV. She was right there pushing these policies. So what do you think? What do you think on June 4th she's going to do?
Let me guess. Go work for Comcast.
Absolutely. And I'm saying this should be criminal. In any rational, any reasonable democracy, any half-minded representative democratic republic, this would be criminal. She would be locked up and thrown away with the key. But here in this fake democracy that we seem to be having, it's okay. Go ahead. Yeah, oh, yeah. Sure, you can shill for Comcast. You can do all that. Go ahead. Am I the only one who thinks this is insane? So the people who are pushing the AT&T and T-Mobile thing, the folks who are pushing that to make sure that gets pushed through, when it's all done, should the person on the FCC who let it happen, should the people in charge of making that decision, should they then go work for AT&T and make their millions? Like Billy Towson when he pushed for Big Pharma to get their drug bill and then went to work for him? You know, this is the kind of stuff that ticks me off about government, like it should every person, because it's wrong. Absolutely wrong. And we need to have some laws in place to stop this. And I think that a couple years ago there was a bill that was going through that would have mandated a 5-year waiting period before you could cross over. You can't resign on June 3rd and then go on June 4th and work for the very people you were supposed to be overseeing. You know, like the Mineral Management Service. Not basically, they were literally in bed with the people at BP. Literally. And you had that explosion in the Gulf. Every one of those people should have been fired and jailed. Anyway, my blood pressure has to come down. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Weinstein. We're right back after this. Stick around. This is why we fight, why we lie away. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is making major investments in Midwestern states, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. auto company said it plans to invest $2 billion into 17 U.S. plants in 8 states. As a result of the investment, GM says it will preserve or create 4,000 jobs. The Tuesday announcement came with few details as to which plants would be the beneficiaries of the investment. Many of the jobs will likely be offered to the 1,300 employees currently languishing in layoff limbo. The company does plan to recall all of those workers by the end of the year. Since the company left bankruptcy in 2009, thanks mostly to a controversial bailout by the Obama administration, it has preserved or created nearly 10,000 jobs. Any new positions will likely come in at the $14 per hour entry level wage as part of one of the major contract concessions agreed to by the United Auto Workers in order to help lift the company out of bankruptcy.
The AFL-CIO is endorsing the America Health Security Act that would move the country to a single-payer universal health care model. The AFL-CIO says health care reform last year was an historic milestone, but since health care is a human right, the nation needs a universal single-payer health care system. The United Auto Workers' effort to organize teaching assistants at NYU is kicking into a higher gear. A majority of teaching, research, and graduate assistants at NYU Poly have filed for an NLRB union election to win recognition as a UAW bargaining unit. Manoj Ganesh is working as a research assistant while he completes his PhD in chemical and biological sciences. He hopes to have an election this summer to establish a union at NYU Poly.
At the end of summer, we would have an NLRB election for our union, and hopefully by the unanimous support by all our graduate students, which we all share, I think it'll result in a global success. And this will only be kind of like an example to the rest of the schools out there where they can establish better standards.
Lab safety is one of the biggest issues, and Ganesh says the teaching assistants at the university can get better, safer working conditions with the union.
We'll be having a hearing soon about whether or not Poly is agreeing to talk with us on these global issues of lab safety and also better work conditions and also paying these students who are actually employees to begin with.
In 2004, an anti-union majority of Bush-appointed NLRB board members stripped teaching assistants of their labor rights, but those rights are expected to be restored by the current National Labor Relations Board. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, not too long ago, one of the local churches I drive by had this military, like a military-style recruiting sign out in front of their church, attempting to attract what they were calling soldiers of God. I occasionally get emails from people who call themselves Christian warriors. You know, during the Bush years, we had General Boykins, who, you know, basically came out and said, "My God's bigger than your God." There was a lot of this attempt during the Bush years, especially, of the marriage between extreme right-wing neoconservative theology and our military. And it was concerning to me then, and, you know, there's still a lot of concern there. That's why I've asked Mikey Weinstein, founder and president of Military Religious Freedom Foundation, to come talk to us. Mikey, thanks for taking time.
My pleasure. I was just very recently in Carlisle. I was a guest speaker at the Army War College, so I love your community out there.
Oh, very nice place, indeed. And tell me, what is the Military Religious Freedom Foundation?
We are an internationally recognized civil rights organization. We're a nonprofit charity. We have a singular goal, and that's to try to rebuild the now obliterated wall separating church and state, which is nothing but smoke and debris between, the spiritual and temporal, between the metaphysical and physical, and again, between church and state, and the technologically, Rick, most lethal organization ever created by humankind, which is our honorable and noble U.S. military. We have about, next week we'll go past 23,000 clients of ours who are active duty United States sailors, soldiers, Marines, airmen, cadets and midshipmen at the Air Force Academy West Point in Annapolis, reservists, National Guardsmen, Coast Guard personnel, I should say, and veterans. And 96% of our clients are practicing Christians. About three-fourths are Protestants, Rick, of pretty much every stripe and variety denomination. We have 21 different varieties of Baptists alone. The other one-fourth are Roman Catholics. So only 4% of our clients are not practicing Christians.
So would it be safe to assume then that you know, because some of the people that I've talked to have said, you know, our military is a Christian military and a Christian God and this whole line of very radical use of the Christian faith to promote our military. Have you seen that?
Well, that's why what I wrote a book about. That's what we're in movies about. That's what we do. There's a we refer to it, if you remember. President Eisenhower's famous speech, probably his most famous speech, was, you remember, his farewell speech, where he warned America about what, Rick, do you remember?
Well, the rise of the military-industrial complex.
Right. What we're fighting at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is what we refer to as a fundamentalist Christian parachurch military corporate proselytizing complex. We have, if you will, a fundamentalist Christian Taliban throughout our U.S. military. Anyone who doubts this, you know, just give me, you know, give me 300 seconds, 5 minutes, go to our website, which is militaryreligiousfreedom.org. Again, we're a nonprofit charity. Look at the video, look at the text, listen to the audio. There's a reason we have 3 Nobel Peace Prize nominations, 2 for last year and 1 for this year. And it's a very, very, very serious business when you conflate, you know, out of control fundamentalist Christianity with our conventional laser-guided and nuclear weapons.
Well, do you think, I mean, part of that, I think, comes out of the fact that, you know, during the Bush years especially, we demonized Islam, we demonized anyone that didn't look like us. So I think it's a natural progression that you would see this kind of extremism, because that's who we've been told is the enemy.
You're absolutely right. The amazing thing is that it's astonishing that most of our clients are Lutherans, Baptists, Methodists, Episcopalians, LDS, Roman Catholic, being told that they are not Christian enough for their military superiors. So it's astonishing. It's almost, it's essentially, if you will, a fanatical religiosity. In this case, not Wahhabist Islam, but fundamentalist or dominion Christianity, as it's called, mixed in with actual weapons of mass destruction. This is the calculus that I'm going to tell you now. We have them. Thank God the other side doesn't. Mixed in with completely unfettered access, provided by the draconian specter of military command influence. Mixed in with a complete abrogation, Rick, of any of the oath that everyone in the military takes to, you know, to support and defend, you know, not the Torah or the Quran or the Bible, the New Testament, but the Constitution, you know, it's so impossible to believe that unless you're complicit, it's like you can't believe it. But it's real, and it's a very shocking, it's essentially a national security threat. It's not a problem, issue, or challenge that we're talking about tonight on your show.
How did we get here? I mean, you know, I have a friend who's a little bit younger than I am, and, you know, he was a Marine, and he preaches to me, God, Country, Corps, in that order. You know, his God first, his country first, the Marine Corps, and in that order, and it's ingrained in him, and there can be no deviation from that in his worldview.
Well, see, the problem is that perspective is a violation of the oath that your friend took, again, to the Constitution. He may have put his hand on a Bible, but he swore an oath to the Constitution. He did not put his hand on the Constitution, Rick, to swear an oath to the New Testament. In this country, we do not fight for God and country. We fight for country. As Mark Twain said, we have complete loyalty to our country at all times. We have all complete loyalty to the government when it deserves it. And in this instance, to argue that we are fighting, we are defending the faith and fighting for God and country, the message that is like a judo move. It gets turned around by the fundamentalist extremists in Islam that we ought to be fighting, the jihadists, the mujahideen, the Taliban, Al Qaeda. If they cast this as a war of Jesus versus Allah, or Christianity versus Islam, that's a cosmic war, and that's what we lose. We lose that. We are not fighting for anybody's particular religious faith. We're fighting in our national interest, for our constitutional rights. And when people say to me all the time, you know, Mikey, it's a Christian nation. America was founded as a Christian nation. Surprisingly, they're always surprised because I speak all over the country. Like I said, I was just in your neighborhood a few weeks ago. I tell them, yeah, you're right. America was founded as a Christian country, but not the United States of America. I mean, in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, Rick, you know, they had religious freedom. If you didn't believe the way the Pilgrims believed, you were free to leave. But in this country, and with our Constitution, not just the First Amendment, but this includes Clause 3, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution, where it's stated very clearly, we will never have a religious test for any position in the federal government.
Correct.
And so your friend is misguided. That's at best, and at worst, he's, you know, actively he's actively in violation of. I'm sure he's out of the military now, but if that was the concept that he had, that's wrong. We don't do that in this country. This is what separates us from everybody else. We do not judge your value as a human being based upon the, looking at you through the spectrum or through a glass darkly as to whether or not you are the right type of dominionist or fundamentalist Christian, Muslim, Jew, atheist, Wiccan, what have you.
But, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I can see how this happens because we need to have that something to dehumanize people on the other side. From a war perspective, you need to have an enemy and you need to somehow tear them apart and make them less than human. So it's easier to see the atrocities that have gone on. And I understand you're a military person with an extensive military background, a family history. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we're kind of a perfect family to be fighting this. I mean, I know the religious right would love it if, and they love to call me and my family or my foundation, all kinds of mean names. But I think they would love it if we were, in Northern California, Chardonnay-sipping, tree-hugging, bleeding-hearted liberal Democrat. But I'm actually a registered Republican. I spent from the mid part of Ronald Reagan's first administration to his second in the White House. I was the assistant general counsel for the White House Office of Administration. I was general counsel for Ross Perot. I'm a graduate, an honor graduate of the Air Force Academy. My dad's a distinguished graduate from Annapolis. My two sons, my daughter-in-law, my future son-in-law, all graduates from the Air Force Academy. My brother went there. My brother-in-law went there. My nephew, David, just got back 8 weeks ago on his fourth combat tour as Marine Gunnery Sergeant in Afghanistan. So and my family is in we've had 130 years of combined active-duty military service. Pretty much, Rick, and pretty much every major engagement, combat engagement, the country's been in, from World War I to this current so-called global war on terror.
So you've got the pedigree to stand up and say something about this, because you know what scares me, and you alluded to it earlier. I've always been afraid what happens when we decide that this is going to be a Christian country, and each sect begins to eat each other, and someone ends up winning.
And this was exactly the exact same fear you've just beautifully articulated, was the same fear of men that we know by the names of John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington. I can go on and on. Alexander Hamilton. Most of our founding, fathers, our founding, constitutional framers were deists. Not that it matters. They looked at European history where most of the tyrannies that had occurred there, Rick, had been when men of the cloth had in fact been men in political power. And they looked at Cromwell in England, and they looked at the Salem witch trials. They made it very clear, we're not going to do that here. And when you tell somebody, in our case in the U.S. military, a valiant member of the military putting their life on the line, that, you look, you lack integrity and character and courage and intelligence and trustworthiness and honorability because of your chosen religious faith or lack thereof, why, there's no difference between that, Rick, and telling somebody that they're stupid because of the color of their skin or because they are a female. There's no difference.
So let me ask you, Mikey, how do we fix this problem? How do we make sure that people have the right to practice the religion of their choice without fear of persecution in our armed forces?
The problem is, if you're being even gently evangelized by your military superior, get the hell out of my face, sir or ma'am, is not an option for you. So they come to us and we do it. I'll just let your listeners know it's very likely that we'll be on a major network a new show tomorrow night with a very powerful story that will also end up in one of the largest newspapers in the world in probably less than 24 hours. You'll take a look at that and why those soldiers came to us. You know what? The Romans had it right in direct answer to your question. When you lop off somebody's head and stick it on a pole and show it to the masses, it changes behavior. If you're driving between Carlisle and Pittsburgh and you're on the freeway and you're going 100 miles an hour, you know that the Pennsylvania State cops are going to catch you. Until somebody is punished for religious tyranny and persecution, and we're talking about fundamentalist Christian religious predators, mostly, right? The vast majority of the people that we fight, until there are penalties for that, you know, no one is going to stop. So that's why we tell people, you know, you've heard of the 300 Spartans, Rick, at the Battle of Thermopylae.
Yep.
We want 300 trials by general court-martial. We have clients from the four-star general level all the way down to the lowest-ranking sailor, soldier, marine, or airman. But there have to be consequences. Otherwise, nobody cares. And you cannot, one of the consequences can't be, say, a letter of counseling, or as we call it, a letter of cupcake, where people are given, essentially not even a slap on the wrist. It's like being given a plate of chocolate or strawberry cupcakes and told to eat it until there's a slight degree of discomfiture because they're kind of stuffed in their tummy. That ain't going to work. This is that serious. The actions that we take are being portrayed as the tenth version of the nine prior crusades, and we are emboldening our fundamentalist enemies. We are enraging our Islamic allies, and we are massively destroying the good order, discipline, and morale of our own troops because of this.
Well, let me ask you about this. Recently, Osama bin Laden was found and killed. The president has taken a beating over the fact that they did a funeral at sea in attempting to honor Islamic law and the ritual of burying someone. Are you surprised that the American people or a portion of the American people were outraged by that?
Well, I think the portion are probably, in many respects, GOP, Republican, Tea Partiers. Look, I'm a registered Republican myself. I think it was an incredibly wise move. I think it was very well handled. I don't think it was a great idea, to use the name Geronimo or to say, we're killing you for God and country. That was a mistake, and I think there's been a lot talked about that. But the burial at sea and following the Islamic customs, I think, was not only humane, it was politically wise. It was a win-win-win situation. It was the right thing to do. I mean, people can debate forever whether or not he should have been captured and tried like the Nazi war criminals at Nuremberg, but this is over with. We're in a war, and most of the American people are far more busy watching Dancing with the Stars and American Idol to even have a clue that we have three branches of government or have an idea who their congressional representative is. We've been so dumbed down in this country. The average American is a docile, supine person that just has a very limited interest, terribly incurious and vacuous, and we've got to stop that. Education is the key.
I have to be honest. I've likened what I see the American populace having as something akin to Stockholm syndrome, where we have been beaten for so long by our captors that we now identify with them and are compliant.
I think that's a very good point. It's just the number of people that I talk to when I speak at colleges and universities around the country, including people at the Ivy League level, and you have an Ivy League college right in your own state. And I ask them, can you tell me the difference between an officer and a non-commissioned officer, say a general and a sergeant? They can't. And we have a tremendous gap. I mean, we got rid of the draft in 1972, but you know what? We still have a poverty draft. And our military has become, we have conflated a weaponized verb Christianity with our weapon systems and with our national, with our United States military. This could not have happened at a worse time, because all it's doing, again, as I said before, is providing an inestimable propaganda value of, Jovian magnitude to those that we ought to be fighting. And that's why it's this dangerous. Again, to your listeners, I don't care if you like me or not. You don't have to like the messenger. Look at the message. It's militaryreligiousfreedom.org. And take a look at it for yourself. Tell me what you see on the website.
And we've got a link at our site at ricksmithshow.com. Mikey, last question I've got for you. What do we do to help? What you've laid out to me, again, is something that I've been concerned about for some time, this radicalization of faith in our military and this whole belief that, our God is bigger than your God, as General Boykin said. What do we do to help? What do we do to turn this around?
It's funny. Boykin referred to me as being demonic and or satanic. I've never met the guy. I did indicate that I wasn't real happy with that. When he says that just causes more people to want to, commit to violence against me, my family, and our foundation. But again, what has to be done, the easiest thing is we have the machinery. It's our foundation. For your listeners out there, donate to us. There's three reasons to do it. We're a complete charity. It's the right thing to do. We're the only people fighting this with laser-like precision. Number two, it's a complete tax deduction. And number three, if you're not going to do it, who is? We have a number of law firms that work for us. We are constantly in court. Again, pay attention to ABC News tomorrow night and the New York Times, and let's see what happens in the next 24 hours. Help us out. Make the donation. Help us fight against this terrible, terrible scourge of fundamentalist Christian supremacy and exceptionalism. We are better than that in this country. Our country was not founded this way. Politicians as diverse as JFK and Goldwater railed against the attack against the separation of church and state. This is something that's, that is relatively new, and it has to be stopped.
I'm right there with you. Mikey Weinstein, I appreciate the time. Founder and president of Military Religious Freedom Foundation, militaryreligiousfreedom.org is the website. There's a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Mikey, thanks so much.
My pleasure. We'll do it again.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Let's check today's sports scores. 4, 10.7, and 21.5. Those tallies are from the Oil League. And the winner, of course, is the league's powerhouse, ExxonMobil. 4, as you might have guessed, is the $4 that Exxon is siphoning out of your wallet these days for 1 gallon of its petrol. Next comes 10.7. That's the $10.7 billion in profits that this oil giant has soaked up in just the first 3 months of this year. A new record. Not achieved by any managerial genius, increased productivity, or improvement in consumer service, but solely by the jack-up in gasoline prices. Finally, 21.5. This is the big score made by Rex Tillerson, Exxon CEO. The chief pulled down $21.5 million last year in personal compensation, making him the highest-paid executive in the oil league and one of the most richly paid CEOs in the entire country. Wait, this late-breaking score is just in 0. That's from the special tax game that ExxonMobil consistently wins in Washington. Last year, ExxonMobil powered through loopholes created by its slick lobbying team to pay an income tax of 0 on the $19 billion it had racked up in profits the year before, making it one of America's most flagrant tax avoiders. But wait again. Here's a surprising update on that score. Exxon's taxes were actually less than 0. How's that possible? Because Big Oil's lobbyists have so skewed the tax system that Exxon got a $156 million rebate from us taxpayers last year. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Exxon is soaking us at the gas pump and sacking our public treasury to gain record profits for itself while bestowing a royal fortune on its CEO. Oh, one more score, $14 million. That's the average dollar amount that Exxon spends on campaign donations and lobbyists every year.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Help to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, interesting conversation with Mikey Weinstein. You know, look, you know, when you look at this, I've been talking about this for quite some time. This radicalization, this intolerance that we have towards each other, this bizarre notion that my faith is bigger than yours, or my God is bigger than yours, or my sect of Christianity is better than yours. I get really a lot of these bizarre emails from folks, and I'm on some of these big lists where people are really doing some bizarre stuff, calling themselves Christian warriors or faith warriors, and really putting religion and war in the same class. I understand the Old Testament is really a very bloody and violent book. Christianity, I thought, was kind of supposed to kind of be changing some of that, because what I learned was peace and social justice. And maybe it was the hippie late 60s, early 70s, but you know, growing up Catholic in the Catholic Church in the early 70s. It was about peace and social justice. It wasn't about killing people. It wasn't about blowing stuff up. And it certainly was not about dehumanizing and putting people down.
If you really read what Jesus said, I mean, he didn't call it social justice, obviously. They didn't know the meaning of the word at that time. But he talked about a general sense of fairness to your fellow man. If I can make another comment, I kind of laugh at the conservatives who act like our founding fathers were these conservative Christians. No, and our guest said it right. He said our founding fathers were deists. They believed in the big concept of God, but they certainly didn't believe anything close to what the conservative Christians believe. It was completely different.
But here again, you know, and it's interesting how he laid that out. You know, we're basically compliant. We're sheep. We're not that bright. We need to educate. And the way he laid it out was perfect. I mean, we're going to have to go back and cut that clip out because it was really well said that we have allowed ourselves to buy into this version of what the country was founded on just because somebody on talk radio said so. This whole idea that somehow the founders of the country wanted this radical Christian nation, they wanted nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted freedom, they wanted liberty. This whole compliant march in a straight line kind of thing, not so much.
Well, I think he said it right. He used the two examples that I would have used. You know, the Salem Witch Trials, administration, the king, in England, whose name I just forgot, who was a radical Christian and who persecuted people who didn't believe as he, Cromwell was his name. I mean, there were atrocities. My point is this, the founding fathers and their families knew of those. In fact, some of them came from England and were quite aware of the injustices perpetrated by when you allow government to intertwine with religion. It's a toxic mix.
So interesting interview, and I suggest people go over and take a look at their website, militaryreligiousfreedom.org. You know, because again, I go back to the guy I know, and I probably shouldn't call him a friend. He's somebody that I know, but his shtick was, God, country, core, in that order. And that, you know, he was, that was where his alliances were, and the very radical view of that. But interesting. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for Mickey and the folks over there at militaryreligiousfreedom.org tomorrow on ABC. So keep that tuned in. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, I want to talk to Nick Milroy, Wisconsin State Representative, about the bill that got rammed through last night. Back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
At PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. You made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it'll probably fail. Cause our machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear. That the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. They'll go to the polls on election day.
That's kind of the Republican mantra. You know, they don't want you to vote. They want to take that right away from you. Like Paul Reitwaywerk said, you know, again, I go back to this clip quite often of this, you know, the guy who started the Heritage Foundation.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Yep. Here he was, the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, one of the people, the moral majority he helped to start. I go back to my government teacher. Don't bother voting. It makes mine that much stronger. And this is what the Republicans in Pennsylvania know, and really across the country, that if they can suppress the vote, if they can hold that down, they got a shot. And then they'll be able to do all of the draconian things that we're seeing them do right now. And last night in Wisconsin, the Republicans there rammed through their voter ID bill, putting the screws to the working poor, to the elderly, to students. Basically trying to suppress their right to vote. That's why I've asked our good friend, Wisconsin State Representative Nick Milroy, to come talk to us. Nick, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's great to be back on the show, Rick.
You're a guy who has the best fish picture on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you, before we get into this voting bill, have you ever done anything to alter the length of a fish?
Well, I can't talk about that on the air, but...
No, because in Texas now it's a felony to cheat in fishing tournaments.
A felony?
A felony. It's a felony.
Wow.
So if you do anything to, you know, like chop off the tail or anything, that is now could be a felony. Anyway, let's talk about this bill that got rammed through last night in your assembly. Explain it to me, because again, we're going through the same thing here in Pennsylvania. They want to put all of these roadblocks in front of people, in front of their right to vote.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. This is a nationwide effort. I mean, just like the anti-union, anti-worker stripping away of collective bargaining rights, this has been part of their game plan. This comes down from corporate-funded America, the Koch brothers, through groups like the Heritage Foundation and ALEC, where they are trying to set the stage to have ultimate corporate power in this country to keep the working class down. And in Wisconsin, it's just absolutely shameful what they did last night. We have a proud tradition in Wisconsin of having the highest voter participation in the country. And this bill is nothing more than an effort to suppress the vote of the people that the Republicans in Wisconsin are trying to hurt the most.
So how many people a year, because you guys, you know, you got elections every year, how many people were convicted last year of voter fraud that this bill would solve?
I would have to look, but I would say zero. I've never heard of anybody being convicted of voter fraud for, what this bill is designed to try to stop. I mean, there's more questions about the integrity of the election through the handling of the ballots, specifically in the town of Brookville, that the nation's been watching what's been going on there.
Yeah, I haven't seen any cases of someone without any ID going in and voting where they haven't been supposed to. I've seen nothing of that, but I have seen someone take a laptop computer home with 14,000 votes on it.
Exactly.
I've seen a bunch of stories about that.
Right, and you know, budgets are about choices, too, and it's just, you know, terribly unfortunate that the Republican budget in Wisconsin is slashing education by over $1 billion, yet they seem to think that it's important to spend over $7 million on a problem that doesn't even exist.
Well, the number that we came across that we saw last night is that this would stop voter the 0.000006% fraud in the voting system.
That's a pretty expensive price tag at $7 million for Wisconsin citizens to pay. We should be doing everything we can in Wisconsin to make sure as many people vote as possible and maintain the integrity of our elections. This is nothing more than the draconian policies that we saw in the South in the 1950s and 60s, where they had literacy tests for people to, you know, designed to keep poor and black people from voting at the polls. This is similar to, you know, the original landed gentry in our country keeping people from voting unless you own land. It's just a shameful chapter in our history, but this is what corporate-funded Republican Party across the country want.
So here's what gets me, and this is what worries me now. This is probably going to get passed. They're going to be able to ram it through, and it's going to be probably just in time for your recall elections, right?
Exactly. This is being rushed through the legislature, and it's being done to shield the Republicans from the very voters that they're hurting the most in our state, and that's seniors, students, people on limited incomes, and the working class.
So here's how I see this fraud going to play out, and I hope you guys will pay attention to this and really go after it. I should say when it happens, because now there are going to be all these changes in the news of, well, there are new voting right guidelines, and you got to watch out for. And I do believe you're going to see a bunch of these right wing groups sending out to seniors, sending out to people in poverty these official looking letters saying, well, you need to do this, or election day's been moved to this day, a whole bunch of that kind of fraud that we have seen in the past. I do think you guys are going to get hit with this big time once this gets rammed through.
We will. I mean, last election we saw vote caging efforts in Wisconsin. It's just shameful that a major political party has an agenda, which is to try to limit the number of people that vote in our democracy.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Wisconsin Representative Nick Milroy. Nick, you know, Acorn, and I've been kind of pushing this through to try and see if we can get some traction on this. Acorn was brought down because they hired people to go out and get voter registrations. They, they said, go out and we're going to pay you. You go out and you get voter registrations. And some of the people were not honest. Some of them were less than honest. And they went in the phone book. They wrote down some names. They did some things wrong. Acorn went, reported that. They were brought down. They were defunded. They were destroyed. The Republican Party in Wisconsin, as I'm reading the reports, and you're closer to this than I am, the way I'm seeing it, they hired some felons. They hired some unsavory characters to go out and get recall petitions against Democrats. And we're finding out, at least through the reports, that they have done a lot of the same things. Is it possible that we can do to the Wisconsin Republican Party what the Republicans were able to do to Acorn?
That's a good question. I mean, we need the people of Wisconsin to stand up to this cronyism and corruption. I mean, when you hire an out-of-state company that brings in felons that are fraudulently collecting signatures for recalls, it's all well-documented. I mean, the people of Wisconsin need to stand up and say enough is enough.
I absolutely agree. I guess just one conviction yet so far. The guy who was stealing, I guess he stole somebody's coat and purse at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, that's the one conviction of a convicted felon from the state of Colorado who came to Wisconsin to collect signatures at 50 cents apiece. And when you encourage people to collect signatures like that, you're just opening the door wide open to fraud. And another example was one of my colleagues' father, who passed away 20 years ago, his signature was on one of these recall petitions.
Wow.
You can't make this stuff up, Rick.
That's amazing. Now, let's talk about the recall for a second. As I understand it, there are 6 Republicans that are being recalled, and 3 Democrats at this point that they may have the the votes for?
Right.
Explain how this is going to go through. When's the vote? When's this moving through?
Well, this is going to be the summer. The recall elections, I believe, are going to take place in June. And right now, the campaigns are heating up. There's kind of a loophole in the law that that allows candidates to collect any amount of money for a certain number of days. So we're seeing ridiculously sized checks being cut to some of the conservative candidates. But like I told you before, Rick, there isn't enough money in the world that's going to save these people. We just had a special election in Wisconsin for one of our House seats, State House, where it was the seat of the former Speaker of the House who was appointed to be the governor's right-hand man. And he held that seat since 1994. They figured it was absolutely solid Republican seat. They spent over $500,000 trying to protect that seat, and they lost by 7 points.
Wow.
The handwriting's on the wall. That's why the Republicans in Wisconsin are scared. They are rushing this stuff through as fast as they can to try to do everything they can to keep people from voting at the polls, to try to have as much conservative policy put through as they possibly can before they lose their majority here in Wisconsin. It's what I call the kamikaze approach to legislating.
The last bit of desperation before it's all over for them. I got to be honest. I've been following one of your state senators, this Randy Hopper.
Yeah.
I just find a fascinating character, evidently living with his mistress in another area. His wife actually signed his recall petition. But he ran an ad and asked people to go to this. He ran an ad, asking people to go to his campaign phone number. He actually put a phone number on. and here's the phone number that he sent people to. I just love this clip.
Sexy guy, welcome to an exciting new way to go live one-on-one with hot, horny girls waiting right now to talk.
That's where he sent people to. A good, I guess that's a good Christian. Maybe it was on his speed dial, and he just made a mistake with it.
Well, I don't know if it was on his Rolodex, but it was nice of him to put out a press release saying that they made a mistake, and that it wasn't his intent to release that phone number.
As we're going forth here, what are your predictions? What do you think is going to happen in these recall elections?
Well, we're going to see a flood of money come in, just like we did in this last recall election. There's no accountability to it. It's outside interest groups, special interests, shadow groups, where you don't know who's funding these campaigns. They buy up all of the airwaves and they try to smear people. But what happened in the special election was it backfired. They went so overboard that people just rejected this negative campaigning. We have built up a tremendous amount of grassroots effort to make sure that we get the message out to every voter in these recall areas, and we're going to do our best to win as many of those seats as we can.
How many do you need to kind of tie things up for a while?
We need 3 to tip the balance in the state Senate.
Well, let's hope for at least 3.
We'll take 6, Rick. 3 would be nice.
I would love to see that. Nick Milroy, always great to talk to you, and again, the best fish on Twitter.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Good luck in Pennsylvania.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show. Welcome.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all of the emails personally, especially the hateful ones. I've been getting some of those lately, so very nice. Thank you. You happy with the near $4 a gallon gasoline? You happy with that? The price of oil has come down. The barrel price has come down. Why hasn't the pump price? So today they held some hearings, and the head of ExxonMobil, he said that, you know, if you look at what supply and demand should be, you look at the fundamentals of this whole thing, the price of a barrel of oil should be in the range of, you know, 60, 70 bucks. Not the 100, not above 100, 60, 70 bucks. So, but he didn't say that it's because of the speculators. Again, you know, they're all in this together. You know, all of the nice smiling white people with their white shirts and their ties and the big CEO class, they're all in this together. So they're not going to step on each other's toes. But he's like, look, you know, at the end of the day, should be somewhere 60, 70 bucks. Pretty much saying, look, 30 bucks of this, people skimming. And, you know, I go back to that story that I use all the time about right after Hurricane Katrina, when the government was going to have someone move the trash away, they paid $47 a ton to move the trash away. And by the time that they subcontracted it down, you know, numerous times until you got to the guy who actually got his hands dirty and took the trash away, he got $3 a ton. So there's that massive amount, that $44, that was just divvied between people who had the contract and sold it down. Speculators do the same thing with oil prices. You know, we learned a couple years ago that before an oil tanker got to the U.S., the oil on that tanker had been bought and sold 20, 25 times. Thus jacking the price up. And who pays it? We do. Because they won't allow us to have public transportation. They won't allow us an alternative. They won't. Because they got us by the short hairs, man. They know you got to get to work. They know you got to go to the grocery store. They know you've got to drive. And we're seeing driving coming down. People are doing less of it. And this summer they're predicting one of the least amount of a year with the least amount of driving. But you still got to get to work. You still got to do all of the things that a family has to do, and you still got to pay it out of pocket. So today the Democrats said, you know what, we want to have our money back. We're giving billions of dollars in breaks to ExxonMobil and Chevron and ConocoPhillips and BP and even Royal Dutch Shell. We're giving all this money to them, and yet in the first quarter of this year, the first 3 months, they made $35 billion in pure in their pocket divvy up amongst their friends profit. $35 billion. And the Republicans are telling us that, well, if we get that money back that we're giving them, somehow it's going to raise prices or it's going to harm the industry. I'm sorry. They made $35 billion in the first 3 months of this year. $35 billion. We're talking about cutting education for the kids of this country. We're talking about doing away with Medicaid as we know it, doing away with Medicare. We're talking about slashing the social safety net to where it's unrecognizable. But an industry that made $35 billion profit in the first 3 months, in the worst months of the year, we can't ask them to give back the tax breaks that we're giving them. Does that make any sense to you, Jake?
It doesn't, and I love the take of the Republicans. They say, well, you know, if you take this subsidy away, you'd be raising taxes. No, it's not a tax. It's a subsidy. Subsidies do make sense in certain situations when they're targeted, when you have companies that are just starting out with the possibilities of growing and creating jobs. But these people are mature companies making huge profits at a time. Not only doesn't it make sense even if times were good, but especially in bad times when, like you said, we're slashing programs for at-risk people, it makes no sense at all. It serves no purpose other than to add to their bottom line.
So what we hear from the Republicans, and we hear this all the time, we hear that, oh, the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rate in the world, 35%, highest in the world. And again, like Pennsylvania, I asked the very simple question, if Pennsylvania has the highest and three-quarters of the companies don't pay it, do you really have the highest? And look at what the Center for American Progress came out. They analyzed ExxonMobil's federal income taxes. And they looked at the rate that they were paying after all the tax breaks, after all the concessions, after everything was accounted for. And it's about 17%. That's less than most of us pay in federal tax. And it's well below the 35% that is supposedly the highest rate in the world. And what do the Republicans do? Well, they say, oh, this is a dog and pony show. In fact, Orrin Hatch, the Republican, said this hearing should not be used to score cheap political points. But I'm afraid, with all due respect, that's what we're seeing today. Folks, if you can't ask an industry that made $35 billion in the first 3 months of this year, help out a little bit, because remember, tighten our belts, shared sacrifice, remember that? Just a thought. Anyway, the natural gas fields. A new study has come out. What we're seeing is a lot of methane gas in the drinking water near places where they're drilling for natural gas. So you're seeing all this methane gas in there. In fact, scientists, they tested the water in 68 private wells in 5 counties in Pennsylvania and New York. Places where they're doing this hydrofracking, where they drill down in the ground and they pump this water and sand and all these toxic chemicals together to kind of break up the rock to get the gas to come out. What they've found is methane was found in 85% of the samples. 85% of the samples that were within a kilometer of the active drilling site. 17 times higher than wells that were further away. This is a study by researchers at Duke University. What the lead author, Stephen Osborne, said. He said, in these rural areas, almost everybody has a well. They use it for drinking. They use it for their livestock. They use it for agriculture. And he said, you know, basically when you've got faucets, that when you turn the faucet on, you can ignite it. And you've got now, instead of water spewing out of your faucet, you've got flames coming out. You've got a problem. And what bothers me is here in the state of Pennsylvania, we don't seem to be all that concerned about regulating. I don't want to kill this industry, and there's no way you're going to. This is a $1 trillion fine, and several trillion dollars by the time they're done with it. They're not leaving. But you have to set the rules of the game. And you should have done it before they stuck one needle into the ground. You should have had the rules in place, said, okay, guys, you want to bring your needles in? These are the rules. These are the conditions. This is how you're going to do it. If you don't like it, we're going to find somebody else who's going to do it. And if nobody else will, we'll do it ourselves because it's a gold mine. And they know that. But what's going on? And in the next segment, when we talk to Alex Kaplan from Common Cause PA, we're going to find out why none of this stuff is happening. When you look at the amount of campaign money and the amount of cash that's flying around to keep this industry unregulated and unwatched, just mind-blowing. A, that it's pervasive across the system, and B, just how little we're talking about. I mean, really, it may sound like big numbers. It's just really not. When you're looking at this is a multi-trillion dollar find here in this state.
It's actually bigger than they originally thought. Not now. They've recently discovered, and we've talked about it a couple of days, recently discovered another layer of natural gas, which I've talked to people who say that second layer will be easier to drill because you won't have the complications.
Yeah, because we've already destroyed the upper level.
Well, no, because it's deeper, and from what I understand, you won't have to break the what you have to crash through. In other words, isn't going to be as hard, won't be as expensive, won't be as difficult. It'll be cheaper for them, so they can make even more money. It's amazing the amount of money that these companies will be able to make, and that's great. I hope they make as much money as they can. However, create jobs. Give the jobs to Pennsylvanians, this is our state, as many as possible, and pay your fair share of the cost. And that's reasonable, and that's just.
I'm a big fan of, you know, I got to be honest, I'm a big fan of the socialist, Sarah Palin. I like que sera, sera, the socialist. Before she quit as governor of Alaska, one of the things that she made sure is that all of the good little socialists of Alaska would get a check every year from the oil industry for taking the resource out from under their feet. So the company who took the resource out from under the feet of the citizens, the socialists there in Alaska, you know, the company had to pay those socialists. Now, I'm being facetious. I'm not saying Alaska is a socialist state, but understand. If we were to propose that here in the state of Pennsylvania, the radical right wing of the Republican Party would surely call us communist, which is kind of interesting, you know, if you think of Sarah Palin and her being able to see Russia from her kitchen window.
Can we call Alaska the People's Republic as they refer to Massachusetts? People's Republic of Alaska. Oh, how funny that is.
But here at the end of the day, you know, at some point, we've got to have people here in Harrisburg who are going to say, you know what, we need to protect the environment. Look, I'm in favor of drilling if it's done right. I'm in favor of switching from oil that we get from overseas to natural gas that we can get here. But we've got to make sure that we have the ability to do it in a way that's not going to destroy our water. Because as I've said numerous times and for years, the next generation of wars will not be about oil. It's going to be about water. It's going to be about survival. And the more we contaminate our water, the more we destroy our environment, the harder it's going to be to get what we need to survive. So I'm not against the drilling. I'm against the way it's being done and the way it's not being regulated. But this would give us an opportunity, a transition fuel to what's next. And this shouldn't be what we rest our hat on. We should be doing all the other things as well. Policy, smart policy. Yet all we're getting out of Harrisburg, Jake, and all we're getting out of Washington, D.C. is hate and divisiveness and ridiculous nothing. That's all we seem to get. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Alex Kaplan from Common Cause PA. About this money. We're back after this.
Your defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is making major investments in Midwestern states, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. auto company said it plans to invest $2 billion into 17 U.S. plants in 8 states. As a result of the investment, GM says it will preserve or create 4,000 jobs. The Tuesday announcement came with few details as to which plants would be the beneficiaries of the investment. Many of the jobs will likely be offered to the 1,300 employees currently languishing in layoff limbo. The company does plan to recall all of those workers by the end of the year. Since the company left bankruptcy in 2009, thanks mostly to a controversial bailout by the Obama administration, it has preserved or created nearly 10,000 jobs. Any new positions will likely come in at the $14 per hour entry level wage. As part of one of the major contract concessions agreed to by the United Auto Workers in order to help lift the company out of bankruptcy.
The AFL-CIO is endorsing the America Health Security Act that would move the country to a single-payer universal health care model. The AFL-CIO says health care reform last year was an historic milestone, but since health care is a human right, the nation needs a universal single-payer health care system. The United Auto Workers' effort to organize teaching assistants at NYU is kicking into a higher gear. A majority of teaching, research, and graduate assistants at NYU Poly have filed for an NLRB union election to win recognition as a UAW bargaining unit. Manash Ganesh is working as a research assistant while he completes his Ph.D. in chemical and biological sciences. He hopes to have an election this summer to establish a union at NYU Poly.
At the end of summer, we would have an NLRB election for our union, and hopefully by the unanimous support by all our graduate students, which we all share, I think it'll result in a global success. And this will only be kind of like an example to the rest of the schools out there where they can establish better standards.
Lab safety is one of the biggest issues, and Ganesh says the teaching assistants at the university can get better, safer working conditions with the union.
We'll be having a hearing soon about whether or not Poly is agreeing to talk with us on these global issues of lab safety and also better work conditions and also paying these students who are actually employees to begin with.
In 2004, an anti-union majority of Bush-appointed NLRB board members stripped teaching assistants of their labor rights, but those rights are expected to be restored by the current National Labor Relations Board. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
That's what we're going to have to do, folks. You got to keep an eye on, you know, there's some representatives I really like, and there's some that you go, man, you better watch your wallet. You watch what you see what some of these Republicans have done recently, the attacks that have been going on, and a lot of the some of the Democrats too. Don't get me wrong, they're all with their hand out because that's the system. And until we change that system, we got to keep an eye on them. But this drilling thing has just got me. The fact that we're not out in front of this, we're always playing catch up, and I think that's by design. I really do. Anyway, I've asked our good friend Alex Kaplan from Common Cause PA to come talk to us about some of the money that's being floated around. You know, during the elections, we know our governor took a boatload of cash from the natural gas, the drilling industry. And is it any surprise that we're not seeing regulation? We're not seeing anyone asking them to pitch in. I guess it's campaign money well spent. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
No problem, Rick. Thank you.
You know, you write on your website, MarcellusMoney.org, the natural gas industry gave almost $7.2 million to Pennsylvania candidates and PACs from 2000 to 2010. Where'd that money go?
Well, that money went, $3.4 million of those dollars went to elected officials who are currently sitting in office. A bulk of that $1.6 million went to our current governor, Tom Corbett. The rest of it went to State House representatives and state senators.
So, you know, I look at that, and it sounds like a lot of money. Almost $7.2 million sounds like a lot of money. But when you look at it, industry where you're talking multiple trillions doesn't seem all that much.
Yeah, well, multiple trillions in profit. You don't have to pay a lot to campaign contributions to buy access and influence relative to the money to be made to generate a favorable policy in a state like Pennsylvania. Federal level, perhaps more, but the really important thing to remember when you think about that almost $7.2 million since 2000, spread it over those 10 years, that isn't that much each year, but what is important is that in the 2008 election cycles, the 2007-2008, we saw just over $1 million. 2010 election cycle, which we saw $2.6 million. So it has really skyrocketed in just past 4 years, and it continues to go up, and we expect to see that to continue.
Here's what worries me. You know, I look at a state like West Virginia and how they're beholden to the coal industry. I see the natural gas being our coal, and this industry controlling this state for years to come if we don't do something to control this kind of spending. Because as you pointed out, just from the 2008 to 2010, you've seen it well more than double. And I expect it'll probably double next year as well.
Right. And, you know, the constant argument from a lot of supporters of the natural gas industry seems to be that if we tax the industry too much, they will take their business elsewhere, which is relatively laughable given that this natural gas sitting in the Marcellus Shale underneath most of Pennsylvania is not going anywhere. And as you mentioned, West Virginia, what's interesting is they have a very strong severance tax in relation to the severance tax across the nation for below land barrels where we can't even get one. Just Scarnati, Senator, a Republican senator, proposed a recent similar severance tax, relatively weak compared to West Virginia, most states, and some of the other severance tax proposals. He took just shy of $300,000 since 2000. So it varies across different representatives, but this money certainly buys some kind of influence.
Now, the people at Common Cause, PA, are you against drilling? Are you against, you know, the idea of drilling? Or is it just the money that you're interested in?
No, we don't take a position whatsoever on the on drilling. We don't take a position on any of this stuff. We're solely interested in disclosure, in campaign finance reform, and really leveling the playing field so that regular working people and the issues that matter to them get as much play and as much consideration in legislative bodies and executive administrations as do business interests. I mean, that really is what it comes down to. And this is such a huge and increasingly huge issue for the state of Pennsylvania that we wanted to get into the data, and we have produced this here. We did our recent update since the year ago that we ran this first study. We've added almost $4 million in contributions. A lot of that has to do with new companies getting into the game, getting into drilling, and it's expanded so much since I did this data analysis previously, but also just the recent giving for the 2010 election cycle, which was so crucial for the gas industry, moving from someone like Ed Rendell, who was favorable but really wanted to discuss regulation and the taxes that come to make sure we did this safely, to Governor Corbett, who doesn't seem to want to do that.
That doesn't want to seem to do it at all because, again, you know, I guess in their view, and they keep saying it all the time, you know, regulations kill jobs. And I go, what about the lack of regulations that kill workers? What about the lack of regulations that destroys our environment? What about the water that catches on fire or that people can't drink? I guess that's not important. Do you guys look at any of the numbers that the drilling industry spends on advertising and on messaging? Do you guys look at any of that? Because I got to be honest, I'm seeing radio ads, I'm seeing billboards, I'm seeing all kind of stuff saying just how wonderful the drillers are. And again, you know, it's a nice PR campaign.
Sure. Well, it's a little bit harder to track that kind of stuff. Some of the things that we are able to track are how much money the industry spends on lobbyists, and some of that money, for example, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, which is the leading trade group for Marcellus drilling in the state, recently spent $900,000 to hire former Governor Tom Ridge's lobbying firm for just 1 year. We can't so well track the money they spend on advertising, but one thing we'd really love to see is Pennsylvania better legislation to track and report independent expenditures, and has since the Citizens United Supreme Court decision in early 2010. We're going to start seeing more and more independent expenditures made by corporations, business interests, other wealthy donors, and unions to influence elections and influence pieces of legislation. So we expect to see a lot of that coming in 2012, but at this current point, it's very hard to track that kind of spending.
Well, in defense of the unions, they do have to disclose where they spend their money on their LM2 forms. There's already a form there. There's already a disclosure mechanism for labor. And there's an entire department, the Department of Labor, who makes sure that they do disclose where they spend their money. The difference is, and as you pointed out, corporations, we don't have a Department of Business to track what they're doing.
Okay.
And the way I look at this, and, you know, again, this is something that has to be looked at. Do you know any legislation that may be moving through the process that would answer some of these questions and address some of these problems?
Well, not that specifically. One thing that we're really excited about right now is the situation in the Department of State that has recently come about, whereas so the Department of State takes in all the campaign finance reports for candidates across the state as well as political action committees. And those campaign finance reports number about 11,000-12,000 a year. The Department of State has a really great online system for submitting those reports. And when a PAC or committee uses the online system, the second they submit them, they're pretty much in the system, or at least within 24 hours. Unfortunately, two-thirds, 66%, of these PACs and candidate committees instead submit them old school style on paper. And that not only takes a while to get put electronically in the system into an electronic format where citizens, journalists, and groups like Common Cause can actually do some real database analysis, but it costs the department a lot of money because to outsource this job to transfer from paper to electronic filing. We're working with a couple of legislatures right now to push forward a bill bring Pennsylvania up to speed with the 32 other states that have mandatory electronic filing for their campaign committees and candidates, so we can actually get this kind of information in a timely fashion, so
right.
That next time when we have an election, we don't find out 4 to 5 to 6 months later how much money was spent by, say, the natural gas industry to influence an election.
Yeah, I'm looking at your numbers and some of the things that you put out in your press release that shows that the Senate Republicans, they took in more than six times what the Senate Democrats took, and in the House it was kind of the same scenario, almost six times.
Right. Well, and the important thing always to remember is that, for example, in the Senate we've got 30 Senate Republicans and 27 Democrats, but that discrepancy there certainly does not weigh the difference in the giving 809,000 to Senate to sitting Senate Republicans and 127,000 to sitting Senate Democrats. There's a similar, not as wide discrepancy there in the House. In the entire legislature, 1.36 billion to Republicans and 420,000 to Democrats.
That is a huge, huge difference. But again, at any time, that could change depending on, you know, where the Democrats' positions turn or change.
Sure.
Great numbers you put out. Again, the website is MarcellusMoney.org. There's a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Alex Kaplan's name. It'll take you right there. Alex, always great talking to you. Keep up the good work over there.
Thanks, Rick. Talk to you soon.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Let's check today's sports scores. 4, 10.7, and 21.5. Those tallies are from the Oil League. And the winner, of course, is the league's powerhouse, ExxonMobil. 4, as you might have guessed, is the $4 that Exxon is siphoning out of your wallet these days for 1 gallon of its petrol. Next comes 10.7. That's the $10.7 billion in profits that this oil giant has soaked up in just the first 3 months of this year. A new record,
not achieved by any managerial genius, increased productivity, or improvement in consumer service, but solely by the jack-up in gasoline prices. Finally, 21.5. This is the big score made by Rex Tillerson, Exxon CEO. The chief pulled down $21.5 million last year in personal compensation, making him the highest-paid executive in the oil league and one of the most richly paid CEOs in the entire country. Wait, this late-breaking score is just in. Zero. That's from the special tax game that ExxonMobil consistently wins in Washington. Last year, ExxonMobil powered through loopholes created by its slick lobbying team to pay an income tax of zero on the $19 billion it had racked up in profits the year before, making it one of America's most flagrant tax avoiders. But wait again. Here's a surprising update on that score. Exxon's taxes were actually less than zero. How's that possible? Because Big Oil's lobbyists have so skewed the tax system that Exxon got a $156 million rebate from us taxpayers last year. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Exxon is soaking us at the gas pump and sacking our public treasury to gain record profits for itself while bestowing a royal fortune on its CEO. Oh, one more score, $14 million. That's the average dollar amount that Exxon spends on campaign donations and lobbyists every year.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Oh, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So, Michael Bloomberg has unveiled his budget today. It seems like, you know, these budgets keep popping up, and they keep getting worse and worse. Evidently, the $65.7 billion budget for the city of New York is going to cause some massive pain. Now, it's going to have to be approved by the city council, and I'm sure that there's going to be some changes there. I'm looking at it, and I'm going, you know, New York City, their main street, you know, like our main street here is, you know, a place where small businesses are. That's Main Street. You need to keep Main Street going. Their main street is actually Wall Street. You would think if your main street was Wall Street, and Wall Street is doing very, very, very well, that you'd have the resources to make sure that the children get to go to school. You didn't make sure you had the resources to keep teachers on the job, keep libraries open, you know, maybe a swimming pool or two, keep those open, maybe even keep the fire stations open. But evidently they're going to be chopping about 20 fire stations, closing a bunch of libraries, dumping 1 in 12 teachers, and eventually down to 1 in 8 teachers over the next 2 years. They're going to be firing some 6,200 teachers this year and then more over the next 2 years so they can get rid of a boatload. Now, if you look at New York, and you know, look, I've been to New York far more often than I would prefer. But I think having multiple fire stations is actually a good thing. I think having one every, you know, couple of blocks, not a bad idea. Have you ever tried to get through New York traffic? It's a matter of minutes sometimes with fire and that kind of stuff. So, you know, maybe. And I got to be honest, don't you think that the billionaires need protection too? I mean, I think it's very short-sighted here. They're cutting a boatload of money, and Bloomberg, who spends, I think the number was somewhere around $350 million he has spent on his three elections. $350 million. Maybe we should have another election. Just let him spend the election money. So what's going to happen is you're going to have over 16,000 low-income children kicked off of their child care. And just so they can slash the budget by $90 million so Wall Street can have a little more. Now, those families are going to have some problems. And they're going to struggle mightily. And this may sound harsh. This may sound difficult. But this is the kind of stuff that could cost children their lives. Now, walk with me on this. Mom's got to go to work. Dad's got to go to work. There's no babysitting. They don't have the money to afford to pay somebody. So they're going to leave little 4 or 5-year-old Jimmy home alone. And I don't know about your kids, but my 5-year-old, he seems to get himself into a lot of trouble when he's home and not officially supervised. Someone's in the house, just in a different portion of the house. What happens to that 4, 5, 6-year-old? What happens when they're left home 4 or 5 hours? Because mom's got to go to work. Dad's got to go to work. And there's nobody there to help. And I know. Well, you shouldn't have had the kid unless they could take care of it. Yeah, I've heard that whole thing before. Here, let's wake up and move into the real world. Yeah, all that stuff's fine. All that stuff's great. We should have family structures where grandma and grandpa live in the house with you and take care of the children. Yeah, yeah, been down that whole argument. Yeah, utopia. Norman Rockwell, yeah, right there. Ain't happening. So you have to deal with what is. And what is in order to stay in your apartment, mom or dad or both have to go out and work. And sometimes, especially the people who are in low-income situations, mom's working, there's no dad around, and somehow the kid's gotta be watched. So mom's off at work trying to make a living, now you got problems. They're also going to cut 100 uniformed policemen. I guess the cameras that they've put up will work just as well, I guess. They're going to close senior centers. They have cut 30% of the funding for the Department of Aging. So children, granny, sorry. What we need are bigger bonuses for those criminals on Wall Street. Now, the city is talking about raising some revenue. And, you know, I got to be honest, there's part of me that goes, hey, not a bad idea. They're exploring the possibility of charging churches, university, and nonprofit institutions for their trash pickup, which I think is not a bad thing, starting in 2013. Other increases in the plan, of course, you know, stick it to the people who need to park their cars there. Double their fees for local tennis players to use the public course. That's going to bring in rolling dough.
Oh, that'll bring in hundreds.
And another is to hit the inmates in the jails by increasing the phone calls that they call out and the commissary items. Those phone calls, that's really going to roll in the dough. Because I'd say 99% of the people who are in jail did something because they didn't have any money. So what are you going to do? You're going to charge them for phone calls for something they don't have. So inmate 675389, you want to call your kids? That'll be $1 million. Now, that's family values. You got to love family values. And, you know, it brings me to this whole family values Republican move. You know, yesterday we talked about the GOP plan to destroy Medicaid, going to end up putting another 44 million people on the uninsured rolls. And add to the 50-some million we've already got uninsured. Ron Pollock, a guy we've interviewed on this program a number of times, he's the head guy over at Families USA. He's saying, look, at the end of this, when you cap Medicare, it's going to be devastating to seniors and people with disabilities. It's going to wreak havoc on families. And what it's going to do, and this is part of me thinks this is what the conservative plan is. What they want is they want to make it so difficult so that because granny's not going to have a lot of money. So, like my grandmother, and I'll use my grandmother as an example. She owns her home, and they've owned their home for a number of years. It's probably worth about 110, maybe 100 because it needs some updating. Maybe 100 grand. If she has to go into a nursing home, it's at least $4,000 a month. Anybody know who's anything about nursing home? It's at least $4,000. If you go to a nice one, it's probably $5,000, $6,000. So let's say she goes to the $4,000 a month nursing home. She's got about 2 years in the nursing home. She brings in a little over $1,000 a month in pension and Social Security. So maybe she's got 2.5 years before she's indigent. With these block grants, with them capping Medicaid, what's going to happen when Granny no longer has money? What's going to happen when, in New York, for instance, you know, they're saying the average cost of putting someone in long-term nursing care is almost $75,000 a year, which is way higher than the $4,000 a month that I was saying. But what's that going to do? Well, you're going to end up kicking Granny to the curb, because there aren't going to be enough state-run places. There aren't going to be enough private places who are going to be willing to take her. So what that means is the family's going to have to take care of Granny. And that means someone's going to have to quit a job. That means somehow you're going to put all of this pressure on the family. And again, you know, Jake, the reality is this is what the conservatives, you know, these religious fanatics want. They want to go back to the Norman Rockwell days that somehow they imagine. Because even the Norman Rockwell days weren't the Norman Rockwell days. There's a reason those are paintings and not photographs. Those are made up things. Those aren't real. But they want to go back to that. They want to try and return to something that never was.
The Nelson family.
Well, you know, leave it to Beaver, you know, whatever. Yes. All of them. You know, when the reality is Roseanne is the reality family. I don't know anybody who had the Leave It to Beaver family life where, you know, nothing real bad ever happened, and a mom dressed in her best outfit with pearls to wash the dishes. And sorry, never saw it. I saw more families that looked like Roseanne than I saw that looked like anything else. You know, people who were struggling to make ends meet, people who were having a rough time of it. That's what I saw. But this whole thing, you know, you look at this and you go, at some point, it's scary stuff what the Republicans are proposing. And I think, again, I think back to my grandmother, who is, for a retiree, not in bad shape. She's been retired a number of years. Her savings, her Social Security, she's been okay. Inflation hasn't completely destroyed her standard of living. It's hurt. Inflation has surely made her pension a pittance, but she's able to live in her own home, to pay her own bills, and to do things that she wants to do. She gets to go to bingo every once in a while. You know, she does that kind of stuff. But what happens when she can no longer live in that house? Because right now they won't let her live in the house by herself, so a family member's living there. What happens when she becomes too difficult to care for? Where the expertise that the family has isn't enough, that she's going to have to be institutionalized. And it takes all of everything that she's earned, and it's all gone, evaporated within, if you use this 75,000 number, a year and a half, maybe two, where she's completely wiped out, indigent, then what happens? The Republicans never talk about that. They never talk about what's going to happen to Granny. Where does the end of the road stop? Because if you're capping Medicaid, if you're capping that block, once that money's used up, game's over. Because it's Medicaid, from what I understand, that pays for nursing homes. It's not Medicare. And that's something that we're not talking about. It's behind the curtain. And I worry about my grandmother. You know, I think the family could come up with the money to keep her. You know, I think we could do that. But it would be a struggle for everyone in the family. I don't know very many people who can dig in their pocket and pay $4,000 or $5,000, maybe $75,000 a year, as this article with Ron Pollock says. I don't know many families that can do that. Now, we've offered to take my grandmother into our house, you know, so she could live with us. But I'll tell you. That would be a major, major endeavor for my wife and for the family. It's amazing. It's amazing what these people want to do to this country. It's amazing what they want to do to seniors. And if you were a senior citizen right now and you voted for a Republican, mm-hmm. Man, I don't know. Anyway. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell with.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick. Rick Smith Show.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, I saw a funny story this morning that Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana, he says, you know, maybe I may run for president. Depends on what Mama says. Gotta ask Mama. If Mama says okay, I'm gonna run for president. I guess, you know, and this is one of those things that you kind of go, I think you're gonna lose that dim-witted, blue-collar, white male vote. Who, what? You gotta ask your wife? Hey, you should just do what you want to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura Ingraham said the same thing.
Yeah. What?
Laura Ingraham, one of the conservatives, has a national talk show, said, why is he even worried about his wife? I couldn't believe she said that. She said, I'm going to get in trouble, and I'm sure she will. But, you know, she said, hey, you know, the problems of this country are great. Why does he have to ask his wife?
Oh, gee, I don't know, because in a marriage, there are two people. I don't know. Right. It's a partnership. Maybe that's why she's not married.
Maybe that's why she's single, right?
That explains
what do you
it.
Think?
Maybe that explains it.
She's used to making her own decisions.
Well, anyway, Ron Paul is expected to announce his run any day now. We're still waiting on the Donald, who I guess has shared some of his hair tips with NBC, with ABC News. He says that he washes it with Head and Shoulders, but he doesn't dry. He lets it dry by itself. Takes about an hour, he says. Then I read news, the papers and things, and then I comb my hair. And he says, yes, I do use a comb. I do comb it forward. No, I don't comb it forward. Sorry. this is from the guy who doesn't know what the stripes on the flag mean. He could be our president. The guy who doesn't even know what the little stripes on the flag mean. Oh, my God, help me. Somebody, please. Somebody, this guy could be president. No, not really. There's this guy, Jay Smooth from New York, who does these really nice videos. And he hit it right on the head. The media kept talking about him, kept feeding him, kept putting them out there. And people said, oh, yeah, Donald Trump for president. Oh, sounds about right. Then we had that little thing with Bin Laden and no more Donald Trump. And now nobody thinks Trump's got a chance. Gee, I wonder if there's a connection there. No, never mind. But you look at all of the Republicans who are running, and there are a ton of these crazy people. I mean, break down the list. You got Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich and my girlfriend who's talking about running, and a whole bunch of people that most people have never heard of. You know, I'm excited, and I think we're going to go after some of these second and third tier candidates just for the fun of having an argument. I think it'd be kind of interesting. I wonder if we could get the neuter. On this website, Republican/candidates.org, they have trivia about the candidates. When you think of Newt Gingrich, when you think of a newt, what do you think of?
A newt.
When you think of Newt Gingrich, when you think of the newt.
A little nut?
No, I think of slimy, I think of, snake in the grass. That's what I think of when I think of Gingrich. As a child, oddly enough, he collected lizards and snakes. A little bit of trivia.
And
he grew up down here somewhere around in this crazy area.
Hummelstown, right outside of Hershey.
Yeah, well, there you go. And is that something to be proud of? Is that something to put on the national square?
I don't think so. I don't see any big posters in town saying home of the neuter.
Well, yeah, there you go. Home of the neuter. Spay and neuter. That's what I say. And he should just, why he's running for president, I have no idea. He doesn't stand a snowball's chance of winning. Look, at the end of the day, it comes down to one thing for me. The fact that he was going after Bill Clinton, trying to impeach him for an indiscretion when he was doing the exact same thing and worse, that to me is the height of hypocrisy. I don't care if people cheat on their husbands or wives. None of my business. It doesn't matter to me at all. But when you're out there saying that this guy's a no good SOB because he cheated on his wife and you're doing the same thing, I got a problem with you.
Well, it's like the commentator said. He doesn't stand a very good chance simply because right now, even before the attacks, and you know the attacks are coming, 42% of the people have a negative feelings towards him. 42%. That's before the battle even began.
Yeah, I think the Donald's not going to announce a run. I think that press club dinner did him completely in with him sitting there steaming, and everybody saw that he's very thin-skinned. Look, you can't have someone in that office who is that thin-skinned.
There was a giant pop. The wind just went out of his campaign.
Yeah, well, there was never really a campaign. It was a hey, look at me. Let me push my reality TV show and get a little more fame and stardom.
Well, I mean, let's give the man credit. What he did do, and I think a lot of Republicans were looking at it, as crazy as he was, he went after the president and he was aggressive. And a lot of Republicans were looking for somebody to lead the charge, albeit temporary, I will say that. But, he kind of temporarily recharged the party, if you will, but it was short-lived.
Yep. 60% approval rating last I saw. Good for the president. Anyway, what do you got for us?
Okay, story coming out of the Harrisburg Patriot. It's close to home here, Susquehanna Art Museum. Had a $5 million grant under review. They thought they had the money. Now Governor Corbett is looking at it. But the RCAP funding, which seemed assured just a few months ago, is now in limbo. In fact, the same grant is just one of hundreds approved by Rendell that are now under review. Given our current situation with a deficit of about $4.2 billion, we want to make sure the money is being wisely spent, a Corbett spokesman said. Without the money, the museum project at 3rd and Calder Street ultimately could be delayed, downscaled, or even scrapped. Susquehanna Art Museum application is in a big review pile that initially included about 748 grant requests, totaling tens of millions of dollars that have been approved by Rendell. Recap funds are authorized by the legislature but distributed at the governor's discretion. As of Thursday morning, according to the State Office of Budget, 57 of the grants under review have been approved by the Corbett administration. Now, here's the caveat, Rick, and it gets a little bit interesting, and it'll be very, very interesting to find out exactly what's happening here. As of yesterday, the Corbett administration approved, and you'll like this one, $20 million for the PNC Field in Lackawanna County to keep their AAA ball club, I think there's a Yankee ball club, from leaving. There are some questioning if those in the legislature who are advocating vouchers had a hand in this. Perhaps, according to these same people, this could be a tactic to get some needed votes for area legislatures for the school voucher bill. We shall see. That is a possibility, but those are just theories as of now. However, knowing what we know about the political situation, that in fact could be true. And if it is, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Harrisburg School District Program. Just more and more and more cutbacks. Give you an idea of what's happening in the Harrisburg School District. Half-day kindergarten might return to the Harrisburg School District this fall as part of a series of cuts proposed to close a $15 million deficit for next year. In addition to the kindergarten change, Superintendent Sybil Knight Burney has proposed closing the Schimmel School. Now, this Schimmel School houses alternative education classes for secondary students who have had problems following school rules and emotional support classes for students with behavioral issues. More trims to the district athletic program, including eliminating middle school football and high school cross country and tennis. The savings could be substantial, but so could the educational cost. The kindergarten change alone could result in savings of about $1 million. The superintendent wrote that the kindergarten program is on the chopping block because the district has used state accountability block grant to pay for the full-day classes. Governor Corbett's proposed state budget proposal would eliminate that funding and would cut about $1 billion in state aid to public schools. Harrisburg has offered full-day kindergarten since October of 1998. According to Joan Benso, the executive director of the Pennsylvania Partnerships for Children, there are multiple studies that indicate the connection between children attending full-day kindergarten and increased achievement in reading and math. Benso also said that if it happens in Harrisburg, it would be a step backward, and she expressed hope that the administrators and school directors will do all they can to keep the program. Many Republicans and Democrats in the General Assembly are pressing for restorations of some of the Corbett cuts, buoyed by news that the state tax collections are beating budget estimates.
So is full-day kindergarten staying or going?
It's going. It's going.
And it's going to save $1 million, they claim?
Yeah.
How much is going to cost in remedial down the road?
I agree with you. The problem is, where do you cut? I mean, she said it herself. Studies have shown, and you've said this many times, that pre-kindergarten, it pays for itself in many, many ways. You can test to that with your own children.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and I go, you know, we're very short-sighted. I keep hearing the Republicans saying, well, you're just paying for babysitting. Maybe that's how it was when we were in kindergarten. Because what I remember of kindergarten was basically you needed to learn how to tie your shoes and not wet your pants. That was basically kindergarten. We took a lot of naps. We played a lot. We ran around a lot. But at the end of the day, it wasn't much like school. My kids going into kindergarten, it was school. And had they not had the pre-K that is now the kindergarten of my generation, they would have been behind. Well, they probably would have been. They would have struggled. The kindergarten programs that are there now are actually academic in nature and not, you know, just making sure you don't wet your pants.
I mean, that has to give these kids 1, maybe 2 years head start, which is key. I mean, if you can get that foundation of your education several years earlier. I mean, education is the key today. And wow.
And all I
that's
keep
such
hearing.
Such an advantage.
All I keep hearing, why should I have to pay for someone else's kids to get educated? Why should I have to do that? What about me?
Educated?
What about me? I'm so tired of these self-indulged, self-centered nitwits. What about me? Jeez.
Well, I think they forget that when they went to high school, and I love this scenario. Well, I don't have any kids. Why should I pay? Well, maybe it's because when you went to high school, there were an awful lot of people who didn't have children also who paid taxes for your education. Simple concept. Public schools, universal education, by the way. You realize that labor unions were the first one to push that.
But here's the thing. Here's the reality. You know, and I hear those people, and I've got an uncle who does this. I shouldn't have to pay all this property tax for those kids. I go, when you get old, who's going to wipe your behind? Who's going to be the doctor that takes care of you on your deathbed? Who's going to be the nurse? Who's going to be the person who does all of those things that you need? Eventually, you have to wake up and realize that we have to have an educated society if we're going to function, if we're going to be a world power. If we're going to just be a minor world power.
Well, Hillary Clinton was right. It takes a village. And what she's talking about, you know, our futures are all interlocked.
Whether you're young, old.
And if we're going to be a successful society, ultimately, we're going to have to learn to take care of each other. And the direction we're going now.
You're such a socialist commie liberal. Take care of each other.
You know, when you talk about that issue, you know, these people that only think about, especially when you're talking about health care, when all they talk about is money, you know what? If all you're concerned about is your pocketbook, then let's look at that health care issue. Because if we don't get control of cost, the best way to get control of cost is to have one, either a national health care or a health care program that has what am I forgetting here Jesus.
Let me take a break and
we'll get back.
We're gonna let the smoke clear.
Okay.
We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I tip my hat to the new Constitution. Think about for the new revolution. It's not a dream that they change all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees and pray.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Missed any portion of the program, right there for you to download our podcast for your entertainment, enjoyment, and your convenience. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all emails personally. Let's go to the phones. Got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
I was just enjoying that kumbaya moment we had there for a minute. listen, you know, that always bothers me, you know. Oh, we need an educated workforce. Well, if we need such an educated workforce, how come we keep importing Latinos from south of the border that some don't even hardly have a sixth grade education?
Because we've got laws in this country that allow the criminals who run the corporations to bring those people here without fear of prosecution or penalty.
Exactly. But beyond that, you know, there's an old, well, I'll put it to you this way. When I was trained to be a loadmaster in the Air Force, okay, our first flight, that's loadmasters after we graduated, we were all sitting there. There's about six of us. The old timer, he come up to us. We're all sitting on the bench with all our books and our slip slide rules and all that groovy stuff. And he said, okay, boys, he said, here's a garbage can. I want you to take all your books and throw them in this garbage can. And when you get them all thrown in this garbage can, I'm going to show you how to do this job. And that goes to highlight the idea that when I was working in Atlanta in construction, the last thing you wanted to see was some 25-year-old kid come out on the construction site where we're building a house.
Yep.
And he's got a Georgia Tech plate on the front of his car, because you knew right off the bat the boy knew something from the book, but he didn't know nothing from the real world. So I use that to illustrate the point that, you know, I've met a lot of book smart people in my day.
Me too.
That had all these fancy things to hang on the wall and had a nice tie and a cross pin set and a corner office and all that crap. And you know what? Dumber than a box of rocks.
I agree, but here's the thing, Ike. Education's more than something you learn in a book. Education is, trades. Education is hands-on. I'm a big fan of experiential learning. Education is more than just sitting in the classroom, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the truth. With the track record that I've seen from college-educated people, the way they've run this country, the way they've run Wall Street, and the things that they've done, like, for example, the smartest man in the room right now says that fracking is the way to go, isn't it? Well, you know what? I bet you he's wrong.
No, he's not wrong. For him. Understand, for him, it's not. We were a country of radical self-interest, and for him, it's perfect because he's able to profit from it. He's able to line his pockets, and he doesn't have to suffer the negative effects. The people on Wall Street are the smartest people in this country. They've been able to rob us blind, steal our future, steal our children's future, and they're not in jail. The guy who used a piece of paper with his home address on it to rob a bank of $80, probably going to spend the next 20 years in jail. He's the dumb guy.
And you know what separates the real people from the people like that? We're the ones that, you know, if I was offered $1 million a year to go work in a germ weapons lab, I wouldn't go and I wouldn't take the money. You know, if the only choice that I had was a job building bombs that were going to kill people and it was going to provide me a great living, I'm sorry, I couldn't do it. You know, there's some people that have a conscience in this life and some that don't.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, the ones without the conscience that do nothing but pray to dead presidents and stuff as many of them as they can in their pockets and their bank accounts, they're the ruin of all of us, my friend.
I'm right there with you, Ike. Right there with you.
Yep. Y'all have a great night. I enjoyed the show, buddy.
Thanks so much. Always great to have you calling. You know, look, at the end of this, Ike's right. You know, and I'm a big fan, and I've said this a number of times, big fan of experiential learning. Education is more than just sitting in a classroom, which is why I'm a fan of the Montessori system, where it's more hands-on. I'm a huge fan of that. And, you know, look, I don't care what you do, education should be about giving people opportunity. Education is that great equalizer. I was talking to a state rep over here who, you know, he worked as a butcher during the day, and he said he'd walk 3 miles down the road to get to the community college, take classes at night. And while he's listening to lectures, he's picking blood and bones and stuff out of his fingernails. Education got him out of the meatpacking business and into another line of work that eventually led to becoming a state representative. You listen to his story, and it is the American story. And it's a lot of people's story that, you know, man, they were able to work hard and get an education and get ahead, and that's what we want. But we want to make that avenue available. These massive cuts, these painful cuts, man, they're roadblocking the road. They're digging big potholes. They're crumbling the bridge to the other side. Which is why we have to stand up, fight back, and call Scott Perry early and often. That House Bill 916 just has me nuts, stealing the unemployment from people when they need it. Just nuts. So if you live in Dillsburg, call him and say, leave the unemployment thing alone. Fix it by having people who have been walking away from it for 25 years contribute a little bit more. Jake, I know you're chomping at the bit. Get to the food story.
No, I just want to make sure. We mentioned this before, but I just want to give a couple facts. The letter carriers on Saturdays, for any of you out there throughout the country, if you're fortunate enough, and you can, give a donation, you know, put it in a bag, let it by your mailbox, your letter carrier will pick it up. There's been, just from last year, Rick, to show you how bad things have gotten, there's been a 3% increase in demand. Almost 1 in 7 households now have inadequate food in this country, and that's a disgrace. This is one thing. These guys do a tremendous job. This is a very simple way to address a very, very bad situation for millions of Americans. So if you can see it your way, if you're blessed, you know, buy some cereal, buy some soup, put it in a bag, put it outside, and collect it, and you can feel good about helping the truly needy in this country.
Yep, there you go. You got it in.
I did.
On Saturday.
Yes.
Put that bag out there.
Absolutely.
A couple cans of corn are not going to kill you.
That's right. In fact, you know, depending on what you give them, you could be helping your health. You know what I mean?
You know, like they say.
A few of us can afford to eat a few less calories.
Right, you know, like they say, you know, the people that you may end up saving someday may be yourself.
And that's absolutely
right. You know, I look at the people who run Project Share, who I think do really great work. You know, the woman who runs it says, you know, think of the food bank like any other bank. Right now, you're going to put a couple of cans in because you have it.
Take it out.
But down the road, when you need it, it's here for you.
Well, I know things have gotten bad, much worse in the last 2 years. The numbers I remember just from the Harrisburg Regional Food Bank, they had helped just 2 years ago in 1 year, over 26,000 people. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of
and I'm sure that number is considerably higher 2 years later.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Well, that now is the time. Anyway, John Ensign, the guy who resigned, evidently he has violated the law according to a Senate Ethics Committee. Today they have referred the case to the Justice Department. Imagine, Ensign was once somebody that they really were putting out there as a potential someday down the road of being a presidential candidate. Someday he could have been president. But his little Willie got him into trouble. Dumb, dumb, dumb.
Well,
and then it's not bad enough that he did that.
It's what he did afterwards.
It's what he did
that
afterwards.
Was probably worse.
And it's always the crime. You know, it's not the crime that gets you. It's what you do to try and cover it up. And that's the lesson I've learned through all of this. If you do something dumb and someone catches you, yep, I did it. Sure thing. Excuse me. Amazing. Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests today. Our good friend Sid Kavulich, Mickey Weinstein, also Nick Milroy, state rep out in Wisconsin, and of course Alex Kaplan from Common Cause PA. Thank you for being here again. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download it at thericksmithshow.com. The podcast is there for your entertainment and enjoyment. It was great having you here. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming
like the tide. Betsy, as she gets better and better. To our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, head on radionetwork.com. The fourth installment of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy is up and deserves your attention. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, show host in his own right, and we'll be back someday. And thanks to Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org, who makes all of the streaming happen here. Without Ben, there's no horn. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and Coal River Wind, www.gina.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.